Radio.com.
It's time for the most knowledgeable and informative show based around the world of professional wrestling.
Thought we weren't supposed to use that word anymore.
OWW Radio, with your host, Mr. Personality, Alan Wojcik.
It's not my fault I happen to be charismatic.
Along with the loudmouth assassin, the Spud Guy.
I just act that way to get chicks, dumbass.
The resident Aussie, Mace.
I am not gonna lie to these people just because it makes them feel good.
Guest starring Kevin Scott as Jamal.
What it is, my nizzles, I got chili for shizzle!
What? It's time for OWW Radio, live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
This is not Jim Rome. If you're listening in, this is Online World of Wrestling Radio. You're brought each and every week by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Our phone number, if you wish to call in at any time from now to the end, is 267-297-1397. If you're a part of the Skype network, soon to be a part of Microsoft, yayos, you can Skype Sir Rockin' two words, and you'll be on the call with all of us. During the 10 o'clock hour, we will talk about the Todd Pettengill Invitational. Yes, that Todd Pettengill. With two of the competitors from that event, Marianne Fontaine and Shimizu Zion will be with us. In this opening hour, we will be joined by former WWE and WCW, actually more NWA star, and one half of the former Samoan SWAT team and the Head Shrinkers. Samu will be here. Spug and Mace may or may not be here. I know Kevin Scott will be here at some point. Jamal is finally back. He is recovered very nicely from... Well, we're not really allowed to talk about what he recovered from, so... we are going to open this evening up by talking about an amazing event. It is the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame and Fan Fest. It will be this Saturday, May the 21st, in East Providence, Rhode Island. The gentleman that is in charge of this event and founded this event is on with us right now. Joe Bruin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, sir. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take us back. I know this may be a 60-second question and a 12-minute answer, but where did this come from? Because the average fan that's listening to us is probably going, I didn't know that existed.
Sure, sure. Well, of course, you have the WWE Hall of Fame. There's been the WCW Hall of Fame. You've got the great Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame out of Amsterdam, New York. There's a few out there, and New England has such a rich history, and I've been a ring announcer, I've been a promoter for about 15 years now, and I just took it upon myself to make sure that the stars of New England, in the rich history that it has, gets the proper recognition that it deserves, and started in 2008 with a very small-scale induction ceremony, actually took place at a live event. And 2009, it actually became its own event, a nice dinner ceremony, and very successful. And in 2010, extremely successful last year. And now we're back with the second annual New England Fan Fest and the sixth annual Hall of Fame.
If you're listening to us live, fans, you can type in nepwhof.weebly.com. You can go right now and look at the site and see all the folks that are currently in this Hall of Fame. And there are some names that we would know. If you live in the Northeast, you'll definitely know. And it looks like a phenomenal event. What exactly are the criteria? Is it they have to have wrestled in the Northeast, in the New England area? How do you choose who goes in? Or is it how much do they pay you? Like the Hollywood Stars thing.
Right. No money involved, no transactions there. But, I mean, we bounce back and forth different names, and there's obviously so many candidates that come to mind when it comes to wrestling in general, and especially here in New England. And there's just, you know, everybody has their own unique reason for being in, and whether it be the years that you put in or the impact that you've made, so many different reasons. But quite a great lineup, and obviously we started with some of the greats, like the late, great Boston Bad Boy Tony Rumble with the CWA here out of New England, the legendary Savaldi family, Angelo, Mario, Tom, Jumpin' Joe, and, of course, some greats like the Superfly Jimmy Snuka, the late, great Walter Killer Kowalski, legendary Ox Baker, and so many others.
And if you're looking at the site that Joe has created here, you're going to get the bad news. But not bad, kind of good, because the guy has a really nice job with World Wrestling Entertainment. Oh, WWE, can't call it that anymore. Nunzio Little Guido is supposed to be at this event, but due to his commitment, can't slight the guy for that one.
Sure. Yeah, unfortunately, we're not going to have Nunzio on hand. He was originally scheduled through Off the Mark Show, bringing him in as a vendor guest. They will still be bringing in the original Doink the Clown, Matt Bourne, Evil Doink himself. But Nunzio signed with World Wrestling Entertainment. Wish him the best of luck, and certainly a great reason not to be there.
And this is going to be one of the more interesting venue names I've ever seen. The Brotherhood of the Holy Ghost Charity Hall, which is at 59 Brightridge Avenue in East Providence. And this is New Rhode Island's first and only pro wrestling convention. How are you going about contacting these vendors? Are vendors contacting you, or are you middle of the road thing? Because when you look at this sheet, I mean, you've got Sonny, Bruce Beefcake, the Iron Sheik,
sure,
Danny Davis,
sure.
Just incredible. I mean, the list goes on and on. Is it just the lure of a new setup like this?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that a lot of people actually want to be a part of, and a lot of people want to try out, because there really is nothing like this in this area. And as you said, the only convention, the first convention to appear in Rhode Island, and there's nothing in all of New England on this type of scale. So this is a big deal, and, you know, vendors we've worked with in the past will be returning, and we've got some new faces as well. And as I said, you have an Off the Mark Show bringing in Evil Doink, and, of course, Sonny, courtesy of Wrestling Inc., and, of course, the big convention out of the Jersey area, Legends of the Ring, will be bringing in current TNA knockout Rosita.
Wow.
So, yeah, you've got a lot of big things going on, and we've got the Boston Wrestling, the MWF, bringing in the Iron Sheik and former TNA star Jay Lethal.
When you look at this Hall of Fame list for the event, and fans want to know, the Hall of Fame doors open at 4:30. The actual event is from 5:30 to 9:30. And, of course, it's a very nice photo of Joe on the page. And then there's this intriguing gentleman next to you. How does WWE legend Howard Finkel get involved in this?
This is something I stumbled across. Howard, I have much respect for Howard. He's a great interviewer, legendary ring announcer, and a WWE Hall of Famer, really the voice of wrestling, in my opinion. And I stumbled across him actually at a pro wrestling Hall of Fame dinner out of Pompton Plains, New Jersey. That was about a year ago. And he had actually asked me if I had heard of the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, which was funny. You know, we made the trip. He was wondering where we came from. And I told him, actually, I am the one who runs the Hall of Fame. So we just got into deep conversation and enjoyed some dinner, and it just came about, and he became the host, and it's wonderful. He'll be inducting Rick Martel, Tito Santana, and the legendary Chief J. Strongbow. He'll be closing out the ceremony, and I'll be hosting the first half of the ceremony.
Wow, and as you mentioned, that both Tito Santana and Rick Martel are going to go in together. another great photo that comes up here, and as mentioned, we'll have Samu on in a few minutes, but when you're looking at the front, looking at the page for the class of 2011, how the heck does Jameson play into this? Because I've heard from people that he's almost a cult figure from being a part of the Bobby Heenan thing on Primetime Wrestling, and almost very recently has resurfaced. How'd you score this guy?
See, Jameson is one of those guys that, like you said, the Bobby Heenan show only had 4 episodes, but it was so popular and a bit risque, and that's why it ended up getting pulled off the air, and they canceled the show. A wonderful character in pro wrestling, the former manager of the Bushwhackers, and currently lives in New York, and it's going to be great to have Jameson on hand. We actually looked for him for years and finally tracked him down after, you know, literally years of searching. And he will be there, first ever convention, and possibly his last. And he'll be in full character, the glasses, the original suit, and a perfect opportunity to get a photo with him, meet Jameson for the first time. And he'll be receiving the Wrestling's Most Entertaining Personality Award at the Hall of Fame ceremony itself.
And unfortunately, a posthumous induction for someone like me who's done this for years, seeing the name of Georgianne Makropoulos, who fans may know was involved with wrestling figures. At one point, I believe, was the head of the Nature Boy Buddy Rogers and Bruno Sammartino's fan clubs. Is there going to be a member of her family there to accept the award posthumously? How's that going to work?
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately, the only living family member is her brother, who can't make it to the ceremony. Yes. So, but we will be having a tribute for her. There will be a speech given, and the award will be sent to him via mail. But it's certainly going to be great to honor her, and she's done so much for the wrestling business, known as the mother of pro wrestling. So
oh, yeah.
It's certainly well deserved.
Yeah, we had Rick Martel on a few months ago at part of our WrestleMania memory series, and he was just amazing to talk with. When you approached him or Tito for this honor, was it a it's about time thing, or was it just a thank goodness, you know, we're able to be a part of your event?
Well, Rick was honored. We had Rick as a super ticket guest last year, New England Fan Fest 1. It was an honor to have him on hand. Great feedback from the fans, and a lot of fans that had missed him last year, really looking forward to seeing him this year. So he was certainly honored, and I had brought it up to Tito, who I had never worked with at this point. And, you know, Rick spoke to him all about it, and Tito's really looking forward to it. Now, if you see them at the Fan Fest, they're going to be together as the Strike Force. You'll be able to get a photo with them together, and then they'll be individually inducted at the Hall of Fame later on in the evening.
That's enough to get people to fly up there alone, because these guys don't. And I know Rick, I believe, still lives in Canada, and Tito, I believe, lives in New Jersey. So that's amazing to get the two of them together. I know when the Midnight Express were with Sean Oliver, you mentioned Legends of the Ring, they were really excited when both members of the Midnight Express were doing that. It's almost happening when you can get these legends together for it. Are you ever sitting there when you're booking this thing and they say yes? Are you fist pumping, jumping around, going, I got him?
No, it's obviously an honor to have the Strike Force together, legendary tag team, and individually just great talents. And I'm not going to lie, there was some fist pumping action when we announced Chief J. Chief J Strongbow, certainly the headliner for this year's Hall of Fame, and such a rare appearance, you know, possibly his last New England appearance. Chief J is just a wonderful individual, a WWE Hall of Famer, and now being inducted into the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Yeah, as I said, the website is nepwhof.weebly.com. We will post it in our chat room. It'll be a part of our archive email that goes out tomorrow. If you can, for the fans that are listening here, the super ticket itself, are those sold out yet? And can you explain to them what is constituted in your super ticket?
Sure. Super tickets are actually going great, and I did make more super tickets available. They will be on sale at the door for $125 starting at 8:30 a.m. They can be purchased at the door and all throughout the manifest itself. What you get is you're getting 10 superstars. You've got the Strike Force reuniting. You've got Howard Finkel, Chief J Strongbow, Samu of the Head Shrinkers, who you're going to have later on tonight. And, of course, you've got John Cena Sr., Johnny Fabulous, the father of John Cena. You've got Armando Estrada making a very rare New England appearance, East Coast. And, of course, the very first convention for Jameson. It's really going to be great. You get two autographs from each superstar. So that's 20 autographs right there. You can bring your own items, or we'll be selling 8x10s there as well. Also included in the super ticket, you get a photo with your own camera with each superstar. You get a question and answer session ticket. You get the full lineup, and you'll be able to ask them whatever you please. That'll be from 1:15 to 2:15 p.m. And also included in the super ticket, you get the VIP neck lanyard and, of course, the Hall of Fame dinner ticket, which will be later on in the evening.
Is it an actual dinner, or is it just everybody sitting in a room? Because I've heard of people going like, I expected food, and all we did was sit and have soda.
No. We've had a couple different variations over the years. This year it's going to be catered. It's Italian style, so you'll have the pasta, mm-hmm. meatballs, sausage, stuffed shells, that sort of thing. And
the Ghost
salad,
of Girl Monsoon is very excited right now.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, food will be served right when doors open at 4:30, and it's just going to be a great event. And then, you know, 5:30, it all begins. And we'll have surprises as we do every year. Mick Foley showed up unexpected, unannounced last year.
Oh, wow.
And we always have a surprise about that, on that level anyway.
That is amazing. Yeah. So, as mentioned, this is this Saturday, East Providence, Rhode Island. Let me give... I almost want to say this name again. This name is great. Come on. I just had you. Where'd you go? Go away. Oh, epic fail. System is crashing. No, it's not. Yes, it is in East Providence, Rhode Island, as I mentioned. There were hotels available, if you're wondering, fans. There's a couple in East Providence. There's a couple in Seekonk. Is that how that's pronounced?
Seekonk, Massachusetts. Motel 6.
Okay, that almost, because the way it sounds, it almost sounds like a couple towns I used to go around in Long Island going, see where? Yep,
yeah,
there
Seekonk,
it is.
Seekonk, Mass, Motel 6. Still a few rooms available, and same with Extended Stay America out of East Providence, rooms available as well.
Yes, but bad news, your Ramada Inn is sold out. Deal with it. The Extend Stay phone number, I just found it actually, is 401-272-1661. No, if you mention us, we don't get you a discount. Somebody did that to me once when I said, I don't know if I mention you. I was like, no, nobody at the hotel knows me, dude.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
And I would like to mention for those who have can't afford a super ticket, that's no problem at all. $10 general admission gets you right into the fan fest. You can meet whoever you'd like individually. You know, you don't have to feel obligated to purchase a super ticket.
All right. The event, as I said, is at the Brotherhood of the Holy Ghost Charity Hall. That name is amazing. I'm sorry. that name just pops. It almost sounds like something you'd see on Ghost Hunters. They'd be going, we're going there. Yeah, it
That's
is
true.
59.
Known to the locals as the Bright Ridge Club.
There you go. At Bright Ridge Avenue, East Providence, Rhode Island. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up after it, we believe Samu will be joining us. Thanks again to Joe Bruin for being with us all on Willow Wrestling Radio on Guns N' Roses night. We'll talk to you on the other side of the break, kids.
Thank you. I see a pistol in a Sunday
dress.
You got the breeze and bounce and pair.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, Head on over to www.onlineworldwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling columnists today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam,
Mr. Kennedy,
Christian Cage,
Brett Derry,
Candice McDowell,
Christy Hemme,
Jay Lethal,
yesterday,
Brett the Hitman Hart,
the Sergeant Slaughter,
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man,
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time,
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman,
and tomorrow,
TJ Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site that flows you. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
You never know what will happen when you tune in to CB Radio.
Sophia Restaurant, may I help you?
Oh, yes. I'd like to order, please.
What would you like?
Vegetable fried rice.
Huh?
Vegetable fried rice.
Pie. Only vegetable.
Vegetable
Hello?
Fried rice. Hello?
Yes.
Yes, vegetable
no
fried
meat.
Rice.
And do you, egg is okay? No egg.
Egg okay. Egg okay.
Okay.
No bok choy?
Oh, we don't have bok choy.
No bok choy? Okay.
Yeah.
Snow peas? You have snow peas?
Yeah, we have snow peas.
Extra snow peas.
What do you mean? You mean the fried rice?
Yes, fried rice.
Oh, fried rice, we don't have snow peas.
No snow pea?
Yeah.
The chicken? Can you put chicken in there?
Yeah, we have chicken fried rice.
But
you want chicken fried rice?
No, I want the vegetable fried rice with the chicken.
Oh, that means the chicken fried rice, yeah?
No, vegetable fried rice with the chicken.
Hello, we have seafood fried rice, beef fried rice, chicken fried rice. Or if you don't want meat, we can make a vegetable fried rice for you. So you want chicken or no chicken?
No, I want the vegetables and the chicken. Can you do both?
We have like a fried rice, we have green peas inside. Not too much vegetables.
Never mind. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Tune in to CB Radio Saturdays, midnight Eastern Time, on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is good old JR Jim Ross, WWE Hall of Famer.
Business is about to pick up here.
And you're tuned in to the Wild Talk Radio Network.
It's going to be a slobber knocker.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio on the Wild Talk Radio Network. If you're listening for the first time and you're going, dude, this show's really cool, how can I find the other episodes? I will tell you. You can go to clickwrestle.com. That is our official on-demand site. There's wrestling matches galore there and our show. You can also find us on iTunes. And the best part about that is it's free. You're not giving Mr. Jobs or any of them money. Joe Bruin of the New England Wrestling Hall of Fame is still here with us, and we are honored to have this would have been fun during the WrestleMania stuff that we did, the WrestleMania memories, and when we had Scott Hudson on and talked about WCW. We have a gentleman on with us who, wow, he's got, I can't believe some of these championships, former world-class tag team champion. Appeared in WWE, actually then it was WWF, was a part of Jim Crockett Promotions, which became the NWA, which eventually became WCW, and eventually became Sadness, because I wish they were here instead of what we're watching on Thursday nights. I'm rambling, I know. I apologize to the listeners. He is formerly one half of the SST, known as the Samoan SWAT team. He was a part of the Head Shrinkers and is a part of one of the most amazing lineages in wrestling. And as Joe outlined earlier, he will be inducted into the Hall of Fame this weekend. Samu is joining us. Thank you for taking time out of your day.
No problem. Good to be with you
all. All right. Now I'm sure I'm going to ask the one question that I'm sure you get asked every interview. I'm going to get it out of the way. You have this humongous lineage. Was it ever said to you by anyone in the Anoa'i family, see that wrestling thing? You're never going to go near it. You are going straight to college and you're becoming an accountant, a doctor, a lawyer. You're going to cure cancer. You're never going near wrestling.
No, that sounds like me and what I preach to my son. Back in my days, I was more infatuated. I wasn't getting along too good in school. Me and school just never really got along. And I think because my father was on the road so much all the time, and I pretty much just ran roughhouse and did what I wanted to do. And in the early age of about 16, I guess, is when I started training. I guess my dad thought I ate too much and told me to get out of the refrigerator. So I started real young. And lucky enough, I was put in the positions to be at the right place at the right time, and a lot of good things came out of that.
When you first came in, if I remember right, and I'm looking at your profile on onlineworldofwrestling.com, so if it's wrong, we'll email Brad Dykens and Jason Diedrich and go, you need to fix this really quick. You actually started as a third member of the Wild Samoans. What was that experience like? And because if you were there in the early 80s, that was still Vince Sr. running the product, if I remember right.
Exactly. Yes, it was. And I felt very privileged to be able to be there. It was unfortunate. The reasons that I got to tag with my father was they had just won the tag team championships, and my uncle broke his hip a couple days later. They tried to replace my uncle, and told my dad that they needed to find another Samoan, and my dad wasn't having it. You know, he was like, this is my brother we're talking about, not just my partner. And he didn't feel comfortable tagging with anybody unless it was Captain Lou or his son, which was me. And I guess Andre the Giant at that time was traveling around, Dallas, and that's where I had started, by the way, in Japan and wherever. Andre, I had run into him a couple times on the road, and he had told Vince Sr. that I was a big kid and that he should go ahead and give me a chance.
We always hear stories from the folks that competed pre-Junior, as he's known. Around here, he's just known as, well, Vince. Vince Sr. has this aura and legacy of him as one of the most respected people in the business that still resonates today. Can you confirm that? Was he approachable as a talent, as opposed to many who say Vince Jr. was not approachable?
For some, I could see where many people would be like that, but I could honestly say that we've never really had that. They've always been a line waiting outside the door to see Vince Jr., and we kind of always, when we had something to say, but we got to go knock on the door in front of everybody. And lucky enough for us, he's always had the respect for my dad and our family to acknowledge us when things came up that we needed to talk about.
At one point, you actually were, I believe you wrestled out of the Montreal territory. How did that come about, and what was Dino Bravo like? I asked around a couple folks that said that you actually defeated him for the international wrestling title, and you see this unfortunate stigma of him, of the way he passed away, but we'd like to remember him for the star he was.
Exactly. Yeah, Dino was a hell of an athlete, and some of my most memorable times in my career was up in Montreal. we decided that for me to stay in the WWF at that time. I was 16, 17, 18 years old at that time. And my uncle's hip eventually did get better. We did keep me around as long as we could with doing six-man tags. They started back then. We were wrestling like the Three Samoans or eight-man tags. We'd wrestle Jules and Jay, Rocky and Tony and Andre against the Wild Samoans and Big John Studd, stuff like this. But that comes back to what we were talking about before, being in there at such a young age and thrown in there with the caliber of talent. I had no choice but to learn, and I appreciate all the chances that I was given by the McMahons, especially senior and junior, for all the stuff that they've done for my family over the years.
What led to the initial formation of the team, and how did it end up going to the world-class territory? And who was that? Was Devon Eric still running world-class in 87, 88, or did they already lose power?
No, they were still running the show, but they were slowly, I guess they had other things on their agenda that was more important. But at the time, it was a big decision for us. That's when I was the main heel, like you said, in Montreal. And I had brought Fatu in, and he was one of the baby faces on the card. So we were working opposite ends of the rope there, but at the same time, it was good because he had just started and broke in, and I had pretty much had the championship by that time, so I pretty much had a little bit of stroke. So I believe I got him like $50,000 a year back in those days. It was good money, especially for someone just starting on his first territory.
I'll take that money. And my job is to do what? Get your ass kicked every night. I'll take it. I'm getting killed by the Samoans and the Freebirds and the Von Erichs. Thank you.
And after we we had our run up in Montreal, and Montreal started fading because Vince again started taking a lot of the talent. He took Haku, King Tonga, then he took Dino and Martel, and we were there alone running the ship with a handful. They wanted to give me part of the company, but at that time I was young and just married, so I had to try to stay married.
Wow. We've talked on this show a lot about the legendary buildings, Madison Square Garden, the Mid-South Coliseum, the unfortunate loss of the Sportatorium. Several DVDs have been put out about it. One was done independently. One was done by WWE. What was that venue like for someone to come into? I know for babyfaces, the Von Erichs were always saying in interviews, oh, God, I got hugged. I got kissed. They were attacking me. But for a heel, it was almost how dangerous was it just to get to the ring, let alone have the match?
It was, it was very tight quarters. It was, you come right through the crowd, right down the center aisle, and all the fans were definitely all over the Von Erichs. They were big baby faces. For us, it was very hard because we were a threat to their legacy and their championship. Was nobody, I guess, beat them as many times as we did, and I thought that we had some good matches, though, so that's what created the chemistry.
Who had the book at that point? Was it Mantell? Was it Gary Hard? Was it the Von Erich boys?
No, it was Michael Hayes was in there. He was a little bit.
Oh, wow.
And he was in there with Buddy, and Buddy and I, we were always, I broke in world class. Like I first started there when I was 16 years old, and
oh, my goodness.
Kind of thought I was a little Freebird, then a little Samoan Freebird. They kind of took me under their wing, and that's how I found Jack Daniels, and that's another story anyway.
that's for the DVD that'll be. That's for the True Hollywood Storybook that'll be out along there later on.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Was it a money decision that made you guys go to Jim Crocker Promotions, and how did the partnership with Paulie come up? Because that was actually really neat to see you guys never talking, and here's a loudmouth New Yorker, not me, but that loudmouth New Yorker with the brick cell phone who could tell a story for you guys where you just look scary?
Well, our dream was always to, you know, get to the WWF and try to hit all of the major companies that were left at that time as they were fading rapidly as we were growing up. It wasn't like when we were kids, and different territories everywhere. It was a wild time, and we wanted to go because we seen the big things that Crockett was doing and down with the NWA. So, and Crockett also had an office in Dallas. So we went and had a meeting with him and got hired through Crockett, got a starting date a couple months down the road. We gave our notice to World Class, and when we got down to Atlanta, Crockett had already sold the promotion to Ted Turner. So they didn't know we were coming. We had already quit one job, so we were pretty much on the hoof. They're like, we didn't know you were coming in, blah, blah, blah. So we had to do some quick talking because we had kids and everything like that, and we had to make sure, you know, family was taken care of and whatnot. So we told them, give us 2 months, get over. If we don't get over, we'll leave. And the rest is pretty much history. We went out the first night, and just as a early preliminary TV match, and it came out so good. The next show, they said, we got to find these guys a manager, and they ended up putting a whole bunch of managers out there, came and scouted us, I believe, and then Paul was the one to finally get with us. And we had always known Paul from the north too, here too, when he used to be a photographer and stuff like that at the shows.
Now, was it one of those moments that I know folks that have said they remember Jim Cornette as a photographer and Paul as a photographer? Was it a moment of you sitting there going, the photographer kid, really?
Yeah, exactly. And I had a, you know, I was young too at this time, and I had a hard time listening to them because I was like, listen, you know, I'm the one in the ring and you're the one out there, and I knew you when you took pictures, so shut the hell up and let me do my thing. And me and Paul butted heads all the time. I mean, it was fun, but we kept each other entertained, let's say, on the road. A lot of good times.
At this point in the NWA territory, or eventually WCW, there's some pretty good tag teams in here, like the Midnight Express, the Road Warriors, the Freebirds are kind of in and out, Rock and Roll Express are kind of in and out, Doom eventually shows up, and for fans that are listening going, who are they? That would be Ron Simmons and Butch Reed. With hoods, without hoods. Were any of these teams that you were presented, did you or Rikishi, now known as Rikishi, then known as Fatu, were you either one of you sitting there going, damn, how are we going to mesh with these guys?
No. Our desire was to get to the Road Warriors, to the Steiners, to the bigger guys, because we knew that we could stand with them, but yet our age at that time was, we didn't know that's what kept us going and moving 100 miles an hour like we were crazy, was our youth. And to be able to, I mean, at those times we liked to go up against the teams that looked unbeatable, and to have the fans, once they seen us face-to-face, say, now that's something I have to see. And I feel we had that with the Road Warriors and the Steiners and
What was the travel schedule like? Was it 7 days a week in the NWA, or was it spot shows and then TV?
Yeah, it was pretty much 7 days a week. Yeah, we were gone all the time. It wasn't like WWF. We were 17 days gone, 3 days off there, so that was kind of brutal, but, you know, you're getting paid for it, so do it.
Yeah. Who actually had control of, was this the time of the infamous Pizza Man, as he's known by Nature Boy Ric Flair? Who actually had the book of NWA/WCW at the time, and how'd you guys get along with that creative process?
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan and them were given a lot of input at the time. Jim Herd was a booker there too. Dusty Rhodes had a lot of input. It was weird there. Everybody had their own little cubicle there. It wasn't like a big happy family. It was like four guys will be hanging out over here, four guys will be, you know what I mean? Like little cubicles.
Right.
And everybody had their own little cliques there.
Now, one of the more amazing things that happened during your couple years there, you guys were a part of Starrcade 89 that was known as Future Shock for fans that haven't seen the history of Starrcade DVD, where it was you guys, Doom, then the Steiners and the Road Warriors. When this was presented to the team and or the other teams, did all of you just kind of scratch your head and go, really? This is the traditional huge pay-per-view for the Crockett's, and you're turning it into this?
No, everything was groundbreaking at that time, so it was kind of, everything was kind of, there. Everybody was trying something new, and it was good to be part of something that was new. At the same time, you're right, sometimes a lot of things had no rhyme or reason, and it seemed like the lunatics were running the asylum, but pretty much when you're on contract, you just, you become a team player, and if you're happy with your contract, and you try to adapt.
What led to the separation from the NWA and eventually going to the World Wrestling Federation, and I'm sure this is a loaded question, but people like Chris Jericho, who left in the 90s and went over, he said it felt like being in the Wizard of Oz in the house, and then the doors open to the Land of Oz and everything's in color. Was it that kind of a similarity for you guys?
Yeah, you could say that. Because that's I never heard it put that way, but I could see what he's saying.
Yeah, what actually led to the move?
From NWA?
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted, our contract wasn't that much, and I seen a lot of other guys that were coming in and not working half as hard as we were, making a lot more than we were. And I didn't mind that, because I'm gonna work, and I'm gonna show you that I'm worth the money that you're paying me, and I'm gonna work hard so you can give me more money. And when it came time to renegotiate the contract, it was gonna be the same. There wasn't gonna be more. I would have took a dollar more. Just show me that you're happy with what we were. The last of the sellout crowds that they did there was with us and the Road Warriors and Cages and involved with the Freebirds and the War Games and things like that. We were definitely worth the dollar more, let's say. And they didn't want to give that dollar more, so I decided that maybe in the future we can get back together, because I was taught not to burn bridges, and I'm not going to tell him to go screw himself, because the toes you step on today might be the ass you kiss tomorrow. So
I never thought of it that way.
So to speak, maybe in the future we can get back together and do some business, but for right now I'm going to go. And Fatu decided that he wanted to stay and work on a day-to-day basis with his brother, and I just wished them the best, and I headed out. And that's when me and Kokina, Yokozuna, started tag teaming and going to Japan. And actually, it was supposed to be me and Kokina was supposed to be the head shrinkers when we went to WWF.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because we had went our separate ways there, and then me and Kokina, Rodney, Yokozuna, however, we were tag team in Mexico and Japan, and did a lot of stuff down South Florida when we were growing up. So we'd always been, very familiar with each other in the ring, and Saito and Ricky Choshu, they really liked us a lot. In New Japan, we were over there every other month. And also working, guys like Vader, the Steiners, the Road Warriors. So we always had a good working. We knew we could have good matches with these guys before we even got there. So that was pretty much it. Yoko went to Mexico. He got stabbed in the leg. He got infected. Well, on our debut for WWF, was supposed to go down, and he couldn't wrestle, so Vince was kind of pissed off, And J.J. Dillon came over and said, Vince just decided to scratch everything. And that's when there's that line outside of Vince's office that we was talking about. And that's when we walked to the front of that line, knocked on the door, went in and talked to Vince and told him that we're no strangers to tag team wrestling. I'm sorry, since Rodney wasn't there, or Coquina wasn't there, that Fatu was there to support us. And I said, let us go out there, and when Rodney gets better, he can come in and work single. So just give us a chance to go out there and prove ourselves, and like we did in for Crockett. And that was it. They seen what we could do, and it was also a blessing to have my dad there.
But the how'd that come about? How did that come about? Was it just you guys made a phone call and said, Dad, what are you doing? Nothing. Cool, you want to be our manager?
No. My dad always had a open door working relationship with them. And him and Vince Jr. Always, you know, went back in the days, and you'll read more about that in my book when it comes. And Shane McMahon, we used to, Don Morocco and Fuji and I, we used to chase him down and stick him in the lockers and lock him into the dressing room in the locker and stuff.
Oh, poor Shane.
But
whose idea was the actual name? Was it you? Was it creative? Was it Vince to switch to the head shrinkers?
That was horrible. They wanted to come with the New Guinea Headhunters, and I was like, well, why do we have to be New Guinea? Why can't we be Samoan? And for some reason, they didn't want to go the Samoan route, so how about the Head Shrinkers? And they liked it, so I was happy that I got at least my say in it.
Goodbye.
But the Head Shrinkers sounds a lot better than the New Guinea Headhunters to me.
And then some. Jersey Girl in our chat room wants to know, and this may be a 60-second question and a 5-minute answer. If you could pick one, was there a particular match during your WWF tenure that was so bad in your mind that you almost wanted to find Vince and go, why did you do this to us?
I hold grudges like that, not in a personal way, but I refuse to even remember the show or the name. But it was one of the pay-per-views where I think it was us, Bam Bam Bigelow, I guess like Five Boinks or something like that.
Oh, okay. That was the Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Survivor Series 93.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. Anyway.
I'm sorry to remind you.
You want something funny, as it is. Okay. Bring that water balloon with you in. I'll see you guys in the dressing room.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff they had you guys doing at this point. As mentioned, we did a great series on the show called WrestleMania Memories, and we talked to some of the legends like Rick Martel, who will be inducted at this event on Saturday in East Providence, and we talked with Road Warrior Animal, and all of them said that the WrestleMania experience is the pinnacle. When you guys competed against the Steiner Brothers at WrestleMania 9, did you feel that way, or was it just another day at the office?
Oh, no, that was a big thing. That was like what you... Well, when people want to go to WWF, I think that's what they want to go there for, you know, is to be part of the show. WrestleMania is definitely... it wasn't around when I first started there in the early 80s, so it was definitely something that I wanted to be on. For just the record's sake alone, just to be part of something as special as that was crazy. It was really nice. And the way they do it now, it's just crazy. When we got to induct my dad into Hall of Fame, it was awesome. I mean, they're spending $1 million just on the party after the show. So, I mean, that just goes to tell you, you know, they're doing things in a positive direction.
What was it like to be in that arena at that point? They put together a history of WWE DVD, not history of WWE, history of WrestleMania DVD, and one of the segments they focused on was that venue was literally built, I think, like the boxing venues. Did you guys ever have an apprehension of, okay, great, we're outdoors, what's the chances of raining on us at this point?
Yes, it was crazy, and Every night before we go to the ring, our ritual is we warm up, you know, warm the bones up, put a little bit of oil on, wet our hair, and and head towards the ring, you know. And before we hit the ring, the air then dried our hair. We had a big afros before we got to the ring. We looked like Bone Thugs Harmony, and it was crazy.
I'm just trying to envision that. I remember that match, just sitting there going, wow, interesting. This was another situation in WWF at the time, like you had in the NWA. At one point, you mentioned the Steiners, they came along, Smoking Guns were here, Money Incorporated was here, Bam Bam Bigelow was mixed in and out in tag teams. You had the late Owen Hart and Coco Beware. Was there any particular team that you guys said, if creative came to you and said, so we're a little lost who to put you guys with, who do you want?
No, it didn't really matter to us. We like the faster workers, the smaller guys, like 1-2-3 Kid and Marty Jannetty. We used to have great ones with them, the Smoking Guns. Just for the people to see our big asses keep up with them. I think that was kind of something interesting in itself, and we like to go. I mean, we're always balls to the walls.
Yeah. Me being the native New Yorker, I have to ask the question: the Madison Square Garden experience—is it as breathtaking as a lot of people say, or is it just another arena to the wrestlers?
Oh no. No, the Garden is that's one of your biggest shows. I mean, before Mania, it was the Garden. So I mean, nobody missed the Garden. Yeah, I mean, people get fired for missing the Garden. That was Vince Jr.'s favorite venue. It was his father's favorite venue, and he kind of just keeps the respect going for that place. And it is something special. I mean, one of my first debuts, I believe, was there after Andre told Vince Sr. We were at the hotel, and my dad was, kids would argue with their dad, and he was like, you don't even go to the Garden, because I wanted to go, because it was so special back then. He was like, you can't even go. You stay home. And I was like, well, I'm going to go anyway. He said, well, they're not going to let you in. So I put my Lava Lava on, which is my wraparound thing. I let my hair down. I went to the back door. They said, come on in. So I went in. I went upstairs, and stuck my head in the dressing room to kind of show my dad, I told you I could get in. I looked at him, he gave me that dirty look, and I just shut the dressing room door and walked back out in the hall. And I was standing there, and they were just starting to do a battle royal at that time, and I believe Anoki was in it. Everybody was in this damn battle royal. And Vince Jr. came by, I was standing, he says, you want to go out there? I said, yeah. He says, go ahead. And I was like, I had so many things running through my mind. First, it's my Lava Lava. I'm naked underneath this thing. but I'm not going to let that stop me. I'm going to tie this thing extra tight. I'm going to take my ass out there, and we're going to do it. And that's what happened. I went out there, and the next thing you know, I was tagging with my dad.
That's just amazing to hear a story like that. I'm just taking, that's one of those moments that for producers to rock and hears it, that's one of those market that goes into the I Bet You Didn't Know file that WWF has that stinks, and ours is like even better. When you look back on these times of traveling the road with Afa, with Rikishi, and parts of the time I believe Captain Lou Albano was in there with you. What's that car like? Is that just like a laugh fest? Is it everybody's quiet? What's a typical travel situation for you guys like back in that era?
Yeah, that's going to be in my book too.
Damn, he's not going to answer anything for us.
No, Captain was always, I mean, I don't know. There was so many classic people back then. Everybody was real. Everybody could, I don't know. You wouldn't, today, half of the things we did back then, you'd be fired in a minute. You got away with so much back then, I guess, because the powers that be were having fun right next to you. So that's like I said, that's going to be in the book.
Now, what do you think of the current? I mean, at one point, the current roster under Johnny Ace, they had these guys almost like how NBA players have to travel in a full suit and tie. Would you and Rikishi have sat there going, yeah, full suit and tie my ass?
I think Batista started that, I believe, all I was told. I think it's good. I think it's good that the guys are respecting the business and carrying themselves well. And I don't think it would have been I would have still wore flip-flops. I don't think it would have been a smart move for us, especially with the gimmicks they gave us. I don't see no New Guinea headhunters wearing suits.
Yeah. This is a staple question that's asked on this show, and my normal colleagues, Spug and Mace, are not here, so I get to ask this one, and the lawyer's on standby if we need it. And this, I know this may be in your upcoming book, but I got to ask it anyway. Wrestlers are infamous. You were in a roster that at one point had Mr. Fuji in and out, Owen Hart in and out, the Rougeaus, the British Bulldogs. What's the best rib that you ever had pulled on you guys? You saw in a locker room pulled on you, and did you guys ever just go, yeah, this ribbon thing's stupid?
Well, they started to rib us lightly, and then they found out we already knew how to play the game, so our ribs really didn't go farther, and they kind of just woke up a monster. So we kind of, just got all, and we had Fuji, in our corner. We're young kids now, remember, and Fuji is whispering in our ear. It's like the devil on one corner, angels on the other, and he's telling us how to get these kids back and what to do with them and how to shave their eyebrows, when to shave it. It's crazy. I've seen Fuji, take the young boys' car. I think it was the smoking guns, matter of fact. As soon as they got to the territory, we shaved their eyebrows. They were passed out at the bar. We went out to their rental car, pulled all the seats out of their car, and left it on the side, and then shut the doors, put toothpick in a lock and broke it off so they couldn't even open the doors to put the seat back in to get anywhere. So we don't know what happened after that. We all went back laughing to the hotel, but that was a everyday thing.
We just had BG James on, who was Road Dog at the time, and he talked about the hot spray that's put on by people like Lex Luger and Davey Boy. He said that when the New Age Outlaws were working them, he's allergic to the stuff, and he said, so I decided to, well, what's the proper word, pee in their bottle. I'm just going, this doesn't happen in the White House. This doesn't happen at IBM. Only in professional wrestling does this stuff happen.
Oh, yeah, it happens.
When
Barry Lawler first got there was many people shitting his crown, I'm sure.
Really?
I had nothing to do with it, of course.
No, innocent. You were reading a copy of War and Peace at the time.
But I was there when I guess he had a lot of heat with a lot of people.
Yep.
I don't know what it was, but a lot of people were hot at him.
Yeah. Before we let you go, you're here to talk. We've been talking about, especially with Joe Bruin earlier in the evening, the New England Fan Fest. It's this Saturday.
Yeah,
when you were approached for this,
he does for the guys, and not forgetting us, and going out of his way to put these things on, and
mm-hmm.
it's rewarding, and at the same time, it's something special, and I can't thank him enough for putting them on.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking time out for us. We really appreciate it.
No problem. You guys have a good one. I hope to see you out there soon, and see you Saturday.
You betcha. It is at the Brotherhood of the Holy Ghost Charity Hall, 59 Bright Ridge Avenue in East Providence. Once again, the website is nepwhof.weebly.com. We're going to go from one indie super event to another one. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk the Todd Pettengill Invitational with Marianne Fontaine, all on World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be right back.
Bye. This is the Ultimate Warrior. I am taking time from my job delivery pizza for Papa John's to tell all the little model warriors out there to tune into this radio program from the 7th moon of Raxor in the Gaxan Galaxy, called Wrestle Talk Radio. This show is on during the apex of the sun and the dark side of Saturn, otherwise known to the masses as Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time Zones. Or when the WWE or TNA pay-per-viewerships finish and the warrior stands supreme over the fallen victims of X-Lax. So go, puny masses, and listen to the show, because the power of the warrior commands you to do it. Now the warrior needs to go and deliver this meat lover's pizza to the mortals that ordered it.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show. So tune in. Listen. I demand it.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Hey, this is former WWE superstar Shawn Michaels.
I just can't stand.
And you are listening to Wild Talk Radio.
Second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. We are here each and every week on Tuesday nights from 9 till we run out of stuff, which usually around midnight. If you've been joining us for the first hour, thanks to Joe Bruin and Samu Anoa'i of the Head Shrinkers for the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. Sir Rockin has posted a link of going who's here next week. I can't tell you yet. It's too damn good. I can't say it yet. I will say it is a former WWE World Champion. But I'm not giving it away yet. I'm sorry. It's just too damn good.
we're going to shift gears. On the third hour, we'll get into all the fun of WWE and TNA. Kevin Scott will probably join us. Phil Strum, maybe. Maybe not, depending on his schedule. If you live in Lakewood, New Jersey, if you live in Lakewood, Ohio, and you're a follower of Absolute Intense Wrestling, you know that this Friday and Saturday is the inaugural, yeah, I get to say this, Todd Pettengill Invitational. It's going to be from the AIW Arena, which is St. Gregory's Byzantine Hall, 12920 Madison Avenue. We'll get into all the tickets and all that fun stuff. This is a two-night single elimination event that will feature 24 of the best independent wrestlers in the world, ending in a three-way dance, and we are fortunate enough to have one of the 24 people. He will be taking on our least favorite guest ever, and that would be Cole Cabana. He, with the exception of Joey Ryan, this man has probably the best mustache in professional wrestling. He is sometimes known as the megastar. We know him as Marion Fontaine. Thank you so much for taking time out of your training schedule to be with us tonight.
Thank you, Alan. That was a splendid introduction. If you could get me a soundbite of that so I can play that over and over again, that would be awesome.
When this idea was presented to the AIW locker room, we were able to have you and Shima Zion on thanks to Chandler Biggins. When this event was planned, did any of you scratch your head and go, Todd Pettengill, really? What the heck are you? Or were you guys enjoying the Budweiser sponsorship way too much over there?
I think something like this was kind of right up my alley, because the moment you hear it, you're like, this is really absurd. The Todd Pettengill Invitational, but, you know, I go with it and run with it. I think there's been a good amount of attention to it, and I don't think much of it has been negative. I think it's kind of like tongue-in-cheek, so I laughed the first time I heard it.
But yeah, and for fans that are listening in our chat room, sorry to interrupt, Todd Pettengill is not dead. He's a part of the WPLJ morning show, Scott and Todd in the Morning, 99.5 in New York City. So if anybody's going, they're doing a memorial? No, it's an invitational, you boob. Was this a given immediately for you to go to them and go, so, yeah, Pettengill, I'm in, and this is why? Or were you thinking, not a chance, no way do I want to be a part of this deal?
I think it was more the former than the latter. Yeah, I was definitely kind of interested. I mean, everybody kind of puts tournaments in the wrestling scene on a pedestal. It's something kind of different, and especially with the whole naming of it, I think it was interesting to hear it first. So when they came with me to be a part of it, I was all about it, yeah.
Yep. You can actually go on YouTube, and I talked to Marion about this off air. There is an amazing interview in Mini-Me quotes that was done by Marion with Todd Pettengill. How'd this come about? It's just mind-boggling, because that son of a bitch didn't email us back on this show, but you score him. Is it the megastar thing that does that?
I really think it was, you know. It was the way I have some people in media, and I know that Todd is a DJ, so, you know, we had a few mutual friends. It's just kind of weird that when I sat down with him, he looked, you know, like 15 years younger. So that was kind of interesting. I don't know how
he looked
a little bit over the years. Yeah, he's aging very well, mind you. So kudos to him on that for sure.
Yeah. I got to go off topic for a second, because your name came up on the show a few weeks ago, and I was going, what? What did he do? He won a championship? And then, no, he attacked a WrestleZone.com kid. It was like,
oh, okay.
He did that? What's going on? Is this work, shoot? Did this kid finally just rub? Did he make fun of the stash? I mean, what happened?
I don't think anyone has the courage to make fun of the mustache. I mean, that's just, that's somewhere that you don't go. But, no, in all honesty, I think, some words were exchanged, and it was kind of, you know, like a heated event, and I don't know, it kind of escalated to a point that it shouldn't have. So, yeah, that's as much as I want to talk about it, really.
Okay, that's fine.
It's kind of left a little bit of a sore spot on me for the moment. And, you know, usually I'm a fun-loving guy and pretty easygoing. So, yeah, just a little soft spot right now. So.
Yeah, and as I said, I was totally caught off guard. I'm just kind of like, wait, what?
Did you see the? There is footage online of the event taking place.
Yeah, all I did was I saw you slide out, and it was just like, what the heck is going on there?
Well, I guess it was just kind of, I was tired of seeing him in the front row all the time. And, you know, the funny thing is, I'll just touch on this really quick so we can get back to the tournament, because I know that's kind of the topic that we wanted to touch base on the most. But, you know, for internet reporters and writers, you know, I think a lot of them don't get the credit that they deserve from the wrestling business. And you would think somebody who's trying to interact with the wrestlers would be kind of unbiased, you know, and willing to sit and kind of enjoy the show, but he kind of was really aggressive all the time towards doing things like that, and I just kind of got frustrated and showed him what wrestling was really about, I guess.
Yeah. This card, and you can go on to Facebook to find this. Just put in the AIW information, and as I said, it's a two-night event. You can get a two-day pass for $30, and those are available at shop.aiwwrestling.com. In addition to your match, let me first go through a couple of these matchups that I'm intrigued by. I, from being a part of the Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup event, got to recently be graced by the presence of Sugar Dunkerton. And through the tournament, we've got to see folks like Lewis Linda and Flip Kendrick, yourself have come down here. Jimmy Jacobs, who's a guest a few weeks ago, and BJ Whitmer in this. Let's forecast for a minute that you can get by the former NWA world champion, Colt Cabana. Is there anyone that you're sitting there going, I hope he gets his ass whooped, because I don't want him in the second round? Or is there someone going, no one, is there anyone that you're going, I've always wanted to work that dude, book it?
I think, just right off the top of my head, I mean, the first round match for me is kind of a match that, you know, me and Cabana, we've never, ever interacted in the ring. So to have him one-on-one is going to be one of those matches right off the bat. So that's pretty exciting for me. Other guys in the tournament, you know, there's a few that I have wrestled before, and I wouldn't mind wrestling again. Guys that would be a new matchup, definitely I would love to see what Marion Fontaine and Sugar Dunkerton match would look like.
Oh, God, I want that on pay-per-view right now.
I mean, I would want it alone for me to finally get a chance to wear a Mark Price jersey out to the ring.
Cleveland
Cavalier. So, you know, and you got to represent the white guy on the court, you know, the perimeter shot. Who else? There's a lot of great names in the tournament. I mean, the Chris brothers are in it. I've worked with Jay before, but never Dave. There's a ton of guys that, I don't know if there's one that I wouldn't want to, just in the sake of competition's sake.
You're not sitting there going, shh, Christ, Madman Pondo's in this thing, run.
You know what? All right, let me take that back. I forgot Madman Pondo. That's not my style. So I'm going to say I'll put him at the top of that list because I see him, and he gets a little rough in that. I'm kind of a fun-going guy in the ring, and I think he would put a halt to that in a second with the stop sign. So I'm going to say if he can advance, and I do, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, there's just some amazing stuff on this. You're also going to see in a non-tournament match, Johnny Gargano taking on Akira Tozawa. You've got Mickey Knuckles taking on the AIW Women's Champion, Jessica Havoc.
Which will probably be harder hitting than some of the guys' matches.
Oh, yeah. I've seen, you know, Jessica Havoc through Women's Superstars Uncensored, And I'm just sitting there going, okay, China's got nothing on this girl. She's really hard hit.
Oh, that'll definitely be a good match to watch for sure.
Yeah. Now, if it is written up on the page right, and if it's not right, I apologize, fans, that if you survive this event, you receive an open contract for the AIW Absolute title, which you can use at any time. Thinking as soon as you win this, going, hey, champ, bang, I want it now. Or is this one of those that Marion Fontaine's wishing he had a mustache he could twirl and go, when do I attack and get my title?
Right, that's when I sit back and just kind of stroke the sash, you know, and just kind of ponder, you know, my game plan. You know, if I go on to the tournament and win, I think I would probably weigh my options a little bit. I mean, currently, I hold the Intense Championship at AIW, so I've got a little bit of, not gold, but I've got a little title around my waist, so I mean, it's keeping me happy right now, but I'd love to add to that for sure. So,
yeah. I mentioned the comparison to Joey Magnum Ryan. Has there ever been a moment where you sat there and said, no, that would be the most awesome tag team ever? I could just see the two characters having so much fun together. Have you ever thought of that? Is there anyone that in any other territory outside of the Ohio area that you thought, I want that guy as a tag partner if I ever go down that road, if the singles thing gets a little boring?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I don't know if it was, I want to say it was not the previous, maybe 2 years ago, but IWC is a promotion. I don't know if you're familiar, but they're out of Pittsburgh.
I've heard of it. Yep.
Yeah, they have a tournament called the Super, they have their own tournament called the Super Indie Tournament, which Joey Ryan participated in. And the only interaction that him and I have had was in that tournament. It was, I believe it was 2 days, and I had actually managed him for his tournament run, which I think was one or two matches. So it's something that I wish would have gone a little bit farther because we didn't really get to do any in-ring work together as a tag team. I was kind of on the outside coaching him as best I could, I guess. But, yeah, that's definitely something I think fans would enjoy.
Go ahead. Anyone that's on the list?
Well, you know, in mustache world, I had teamed up a little bit with Josh Abercrombie too when he had his stash persona. Mm. But that's about as far as it's gone. I think I've even made a previous tag team partner shave his facial hair to try a mustache. It didn't work for him as much, but it was good to know I had that power.
Would you have liked to have, when Austin Aries was doing the Austin Star gimmick in TNA Wrestling, would that have been of an interesting combo? Because it's kind of an interesting character.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see a lot of it. What I did was I did really like, because it was kind of almost like a superstar Billy Graham type of flamboyant, and right? Am I correct on that?
Yeah, when we interviewed him, he said he never thought of that as an influence. I was very surprised when he said, I can see where people get that from, but I wasn't going for it.
Oh, okay. But yeah, well, from what, you know, what I gathered, I definitely thought it was kind of up my alley a little bit. But he doesn't do that anymore, because I think it wasn't too long of a gimmick for him, but it was definitely interesting. I liked it a lot.
For fans that aren't aware of it, I have interviewed this gentleman before. He was a part of the 2009 Peterson Memorial Cup. And I want to re-ask a question that I asked you back then. And I said that if fans that have never seen Marion compete, you need to find YouTube stuff. You do have an interesting persona. Have your friends and family ever come to grips with the Marion Fontaine folks, because they know you have an outside life from wrestling, but does the character still kind of, they go, don't ever bring that dude to Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, you know, I think the term that people use a lot is that your character is an extension of yourself, and that's usually the best character and the character suited for you. So, you know, imagine me day to day is probably like, we'll say a 4 to 5, but then, you know, when I don the spandex and put on some mustache wax, that's just kind of me at a 10. You know, I get more vocal, I get a little glimmer in my eye. Yeah, it's just kind of an extension of who I am on a daily basis. I think my family has probably come to terms with me. Every once in a while, they'll see me on television. Every once in a while, on a PWO, which is a promotion out of Ohio too, and they'll tend to watch. You know, earlier they kind of thought it was just kind of a pipe dream, but now they realize that I'm actually doing some things, and you know, kind of successful in the business, so I think they're finally enjoying it too.
Yeah, you can actually, I just found this by going, I wish Zuckerberg was a listener because we put him over so damn much. You can like Marion Fontaine on Facebook and you can scroll down. There is a video of a quote unquote apology for the Pro Wrestling Ohio event. One of these folks, I believe his name is Robert Lindage, said, after seeing you at Bourbon Street, I'm officially naming you my favorite pro athlete. Come back and do more AAW shows. You rock. We had Larry Dallas on a few weeks ago, and we're going to have Shimazai on a little while. Have there been thoughts or talks in your mind of possibly going in with Evolve or Dragon Gate USA or Ring of Honor and expanding the Marion Fontaine power base?
You know, I think the first Dragon Gate show, I want to say the first Dragon Gate show that was at the arena, I was supposed to compete in one of the Frey matches, but there's like a scheduling conflict and I couldn't do it. You know, I've never got any interest from Evolve or Ring of Honor. I think, you know, it's partially because of the work schedule and the career that I maintain outside of wrestling. Over the years, I put a lot of focus into like my education and things like that. And it's sad that wrestling takes a back seat sometimes, but the schedule to do some shows kind of has limited me in the past. But I would love to, be able to take my talents out there. I mean, Evolve and Dragon Gate and Ring of Honor are not only great promotions, but, you know, it's just added exposure to me and more mustache followers, I guess you could say.
For fans that aren't aware of it, he has been the hybrid wrestling champion, the PWO champion. He's actually been an AIW Intense champion, ranked in the 2010 PWI 500 at 387. When that magazine comes out, I know a lot of the wrestlers have gone, it's just a markout thing for the fans, I don't give a crap. But do you feel that way, or do you go, that's really cool, I'm on a list with some pretty awesome people?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was a great honor for me. I mean, ever since I was young, Pro Wrestling Illustrated was always a magazine I picked up, and like before, you know, the big advent of the internet, that's how I would kind of pay attention to some East Coast shows and things like that. You know, that's how I heard about the Super 8. And so, you know, leafing through those pages and being able to see at least a little blurb about me is nice. And I don't think it's really a markout moment, but it's nice to know that I've been recognized for the commitment that I've made to the business, you know. So it's, for me, it was a great achievement. So that's how I hold it. Hopefully, I'll be able to get some color and some pictures in there, because that's next on the list.
Interesting. Kevin Celtic in our chat room has two questions. One, is the tattoo on your arm a Batman symbol with a mustache inside? And wants to know, is there anyone currently working in any promotion that you have always wanted to compete against and just haven't had a chance to yet?
All right. First question, and I get this probably on a daily basis when it's warm outside, obviously, when I'm wearing some short sleeves. It is a bat with a mustache, and I've coined it the bat stash. So, but if, you know, people say Batman with a mustache, and that's just fine. So for clarification's sake, yes, it is a mustache, inside of a bat. Question two, right off the top of my head, it's funny. I mean, I've always kind of wanted to work with Cabana, so I think that's a really cool matchup that I'll get to have this weekend. And I had mentioned, Schroeder Dunkerton too. I mean, guys that are, you know, have fun in the ring, I think I work best with. Those are two definitely that are off the top of my head. Thinking really quick, a few months ago I was able to wrestle with Eric Cannon in AAW, and that was cool because I'd seen Eric, and we'd had like a few little exchanges here or there, but we actually got to have a match in AAW. So those are just like a few off the top of my head that I can think of.
You list on your Facebook page the name that a lot of us are surprised is not in the WWE Hall of Fame of Ravishing Rick Rude as one of your influences or someone that you enjoyed in the past. What was it about the Ravishing One that made you gravitate towards him as opposed to a babyface like a Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, and sort?
Well, let's just go with the obvious choice, and that was that he did also have phenomenal facial hair. So
getting
that out of the way. Oh yeah, exactly. And also the perm that he had. You know, I don't have the balls to pull that off now in 2011. But if I was in the 80s, I'd definitely give it a shot. I just really enjoyed his ring work, and I think, you know, the funny thing is to honor him a little bit as I'll throw in some Rick Rude, what I call Rick Rude maneuvers into my moveset, where it's just when he would have his hands behind his head and as his rope was taken off. So anytime you would see my hands on my head, usually I'll shout out Rude and execute a maneuver. It's just kind of like a Rick Rude Rana or like a Rick Rude dropkick. So any way to kind of pay homage to him. Besides the spray painted on tights.
Before we let you go, Jersey Girl says, I'm sure he won't answer this question, but would you wrestle Jocelyn LaBar of WrestleZone.com? Is that something in your mind that you would do, or you're over it, like you said before, you totally passed it and moving on?
I don't think I would get in the ring with him. You know, anytime I'm going out to the ring, as crazy as I may be, or as funny as it is to see me wrestle, sometimes I'm pretty much all business, and I'm in there with guys that I definitely trust, and that is one dude that I do not trust at all. So to get in the ring with him, I don't think would be an option at all. But I can say that I did answer the question. So.
Exactly. The event, once again, is the, yes, I can't believe I get to say this, the Todd Pettengill Invitational. It is through Absolute Intense Wrestling. It's AIW Wrestling. You don't have to add a second W in the title, so it's AIWRESTLING. Yes, that word they're not using in Connecticut. It is live both nights. Bell time is 7 o'clock. From the AIW Arena, known as the St. Gregory's Byzantine Hall, which is 12920 Madison Avenue in Lakewood. And we're rooting for you to make it in this event because we love you that much. So thank you once again for taking time out of your schedule to be here with us, and best of luck in the event.
All right. Thanks, Alan. This is great. And
you bet.
Hopefully there'll be a great amount of fans out there for the tournament. It should be a great show.
All right. Coming up after the break, we are scheduled to speak with the star known as the Filipino Flex Factory. Shima Zion is scheduled after this commercial break on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
There are are plenty of wrestling radio shows that consider themselves to be award-winning, yet they are full of flaws. While Wrestle Talk Radio continues to bring you the best wrestling talk on the internet today, with no production flaws. Tune in Sunday nights for Wrestle Talk Radio, the best value in wrestling radio. We're just saying.
In case you missed it, this is what happens when WTR roasts Tim Stein.
Tim Stein is also not Jewish. It's horrible to assume the man is Jewish just because his name is Stein. You know, maybe that isn't even his real name. I mean, it's probably Goldstein or Steinberg. You don't know. He'd tell you himself if he were here tonight. And I'm told he's taking the day off for some holiday of his. I don't remember what it's called, but he pronounced it with a...
Tim really does work hard at making the WTR network what it is. Seriously, I'm not joking. Somebody pay this guy. He's like 65 years old. He needs retirement. He gets retirement, we get less Tim Stein. It's win-win, gang. Come on.
Happy birthday. You suck. You suck. You suck so bad. That's not true. You don't actually suck. You more or less blow. You've got a perfect face for gay porn, or at least a perfect mouth. That's what JJ tells me.
He's also not a pervert. The last couple of years, he had a wonderful and healthy relationship. He stayed with her every night, constant, wild sex. You know, it's sad when they had to break up because he couldn't find the puncture repair kit. Don't get me wrong, they tried to patch things up, but Tim just couldn't bear the sight of her anymore. Not with a duct tape holding her neck closed.
Tune in to all the great programming on the Wild Talk Radio Network, as you never know what will happen next.
This is Bob the Fire Mage telling you to tune in to Otaku Talk Live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. How am I doing this? Don't tell me I bent laws of space and time again. God damn casting magic missile.
World War Animal. If you want the best and the most informative wrestling news, you listen for the Wojak, the Spud, and the Mage, the Ozzy. This is World War Animal, and I listen. Oh, what a rush.
In case everybody's wondering, no Chinese Democracy will be played on this, because that's not the real Guns N' Roses, damn it. If Slash isn't there, or Izzy, or any of them, if Duff's not there, it's not Guns N' Roses. Thanks for joining us here each and every week. All My World of Wrestling Radio is here. I don't take time off for baseball games. I don't take time off for that kind of stuff. I almost had to take off time because today was my daughter Juliet's 9th birthday. We ended up at Adventure Island Water Park, and we're sunburned beyond all belief, but we'll fix that up later on in the night. Thanks to Marion Fontaine for stopping by. He is a part of, yes, this still is the weirdest thing ever to say, the Todd Pettengill Invitational that Absolute Intense Wrestling is holding. This Friday and Saturday night in Lakewood, Ohio, we are fortunate enough to have another competitor from that event on with us right now. He will be taking on former WWE star Paul London in the opening round. He was recently a part of the ECWA Super 8. You've seen him in Evolve. You've seen him for AAW, AIW, other initials mixed in there as well. He is simply known as the Filipino Flex Factory, and I got his name right because He said, say it right or I will chest chop you really hard. Shima Zion is here. Thank you for taking time to be a part of this program. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on the program. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can friend him, like him on Facebook, and you can go through an interesting biography that he has here. At what point did it come up that you were going to be 180 pounds of pure smut? Was that something that a ring announcer tagged on one night, a promoter, or was that you?
Oh, that was all me. I think I came up with that when I was about 18 years old, and I don't even remember how I came up with it, but I had a theater teacher in high school who used to say the word smut a lot, and I think I probably got it from him. Yeah, I've been doing that since day one.
Yeah, you've been in the business since 2004. For fans that may not have seen you perform in many venues, what's the background on the name? Because when you first see a name like that, almost it harkens to a Wu-Tang Clan type thing or a 70s martial arts thing. Is that where it came from, or is there more deep meaning and thought in the name?
I don't know, man. Like, I came up with that name when I was 16 years old, when I was training to be a professional wrestler. And I gotta be honest, like, I have a very love-hate relationship with my wrestling name, Shima Zion, because when I was 16, I thought it was the greatest thing I ever thought of. But now that I'm 24, I don't really feel the same about it, because, I mean, there was a lot of things I liked when I was 16 that I certainly don't like at 24. I mean, kind of like the band Disturbed. Like, I loved the band Disturbed when I was 16, but, you know, I'm not exactly bumping down the street listening to, you know, Stupefied these days at 24. So, yeah, like, I came up with the name in my history class in 10th grade because we were learning about a Chinese philosopher named Sima Xian, whose name is, you know, it sounds similar, it's spelled similar, but being a big fan of Dragon Gate, well, at the time it was Torimon, I was a big fan of that Japanese promotion when I was 16, and Sima was my favorite wrestler from the promotion.
Oh.
And I had read that he used to wrestle as Shima Nobunaga, so I thought that was pretty sweet. I thought Shima was a pretty cool name, so I took this Chinese philosopher's name, Sima Xian, and I made it Shima Xian, but I fucked with the spelling a little bit and changed it. And then a friend of mine was like, no, that says Shima Zion. So I was like, all right, well, then I guess I'm Shima Zion. And that's the true story of how the name came about. Just, I really didn't think it was going to stick for as long as it stuck, but here I am almost 10 years later, and I'm still Shima Zion or Shima Zion or the many other mispronunciations that I've heard. Because I've heard them all.
I'm sure you're sitting there in the ring all of a sudden going, oh, crap, you got it wrong. I mean, it could be worse. You could have been Slut Bun Walla or Slump Back
or something. The worst was there was a promotion that I had been wrestling for over a year, and I was their cruiserweight champion. And we're talking after a year of being their champion and wrestling for them. I look on the lineup, you know, trying to see what my match is for the night, how much time I got on my match. They had somehow combined Shima and Zion, and on the sheet it said X-I-M-A. I was like, are you kidding me? I've been wrestling here for a year now. I'm the Cruiserweight Champion. You should know what my name is. But, yeah, that was probably the worst botch of my name, I think.
Oh, I'm sure. As said, I'm actually on the Facebook page right now, so fans can check that out. It's interesting to read this stuff, that with his trademark can of hairspray and prima donna attitude, Shima is known as, around the world, as the first Filipino male model. When you hear something like that, is that your total creation? Did you pick pockets, minds from other people to create this persona? And are you still comfortable with it all these years later?
It's kind of funny. Like, the character has definitely had an evolution ever since I first started doing it when I was 17 years old. Initially, I wanted some kind of, like, glam rock character, because, like, when I was in high school, I was really into, like, glam rock, and I wanted something like that. I wanted to
kind of have to be a throwback to like 80s, like glam metal and stuff like that. I wanted to make that big hair, like Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue, you know, that hairspray decadent kind of lifestyle. I wanted some kind of character that was like that. And I just couldn't think of, you know, a reason that I would dress like that, because I didn't want to just be 80s rock guy, because that seemed a little corny to me. And I didn't want it to be corny. I wanted it to somehow be cool and chic. So I had thought of being a male model and just, you know, looking, I guess, like a drag queen, because that's how I looked.
So there's no Rick Martel influence at all there?
Not really. I would say the only Rick Martel influence, I guess you could say the hairspray is like my arrogance, but the hairspray, I thought of using that just because, like I said, like 80s hair metal, I mean, that was a staple of 80s metal, so I was like, yeah, I'm going to use the hairspray, and it was great because I could use it as a weapon, but definitely I was thinking Rick Martel at the time, too, so there's a little bit of influence there.
Yeah, we actually have a caller on the line. Welcome to All in World of Wrestling Radio. Your name, where you're calling from, and your question for Shima.
Yeah, my name's Brad. I'm from Kentucky.
Welcome, Brad.
Yeah, appreciate it. I read somewhere the match that inspired you or got you into wrestling was, Fantastic and... maybe a Japanese wrestler. Is that true? And what was it about that match that...
Oh, my God. Dude, first of all, that match is on YouTube right now. Like, I didn't even know it was on YouTube until a few months ago. So you can actually watch it on YouTube and just see this amazing match. But it's Fantastic and Yoshihiro Tajiri against Minoru Fujita and Goku, who I don't even know who that guy is. But... So basically, the backstory to that match is I was 14 years old, and I had never seen Japanese wrestling in my life. I had always wanted to. You know, I'd heard the stories, how awesome it is, but I had never gotten a chance to watch Japanese wrestling. And through some miracle, I had a friend who happened to have a video of a Japanese death match. And I feel like years ago, or I don't know, maybe still today, I don't know, a lot of people, their first exposure to Japanese wrestling is death matches. So this was no different. This was a tape that featured a Bug Zapper death match. So I had to see it. It sounded ridiculous. So I actually skipped my school field trip. We were supposed to go to this big amusement park. It was like, it was basically what we looked forward to all year when I was in middle school, was going on this field trip. And on that big day, I skipped the field trip so I could watch this Japanese tape of a Bug Zapper death match. But
Bug
I never got around. Yeah, Bug Zapper death match, some crazy Big Japan match. But I got to tell you, I never made it to the Bug Zapper death match, the actual match, because there was a match on the undercard, this tag team match, you know, that they're referencing, and it's Fantastic and Tajiri against Minoru Fujita and Goku. I'm sitting there watching this match, and it's the first time I saw this hybrid Mexican Lucha Libre, Japanese junior heavyweight. Like, they just combined the two, and I just sat there with my jaw dropped to the floor. I couldn't believe it, because, I mean, my only exposure at the time was, you know, WCW Cruiserweights or whatever was on the WWF. Here's these guys doing Mexican Lucha Libre and Japanese Junior Heavyweight, and a little bit of, like, mixed martial arts influence, too, from Tajiri. And I'm like, this is the kind of wrestling I want to do someday. This is the style that I want to do. Like, the match, like, it meant so much to me. I've probably watched that match 500 times. And I can only hope that someday I'll have a match that somebody will watch and feel the same way about that I felt about that match, you know, years ago. So... as long as I can do that for somebody, then, you know, I'll be very happy with my career.
Wonderful. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. We're going to move on. We actually have another caller on the line. Your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Billy, and I'm calling from beautiful West Virginia.
Yes, you are.
you know, I had a call, Shima. My question for you is, who are some of your favorite opponents that you faced in some of the indie leagues around our area, Pennsylvania, Ohio?
Okay. Well, there's a lot, man. I loved wrestling Jimmy DeMarco. That was probably one of my favorite opponents that I've had. I felt like the few times that I wrestled him, like, we put on pretty sweet matches. And, I mean, some of those are worth checking out, especially our match from IWC's A Call to Arms 2009. It's one of my favorite matches I've ever had. So that match is worth checking out. And it actually won the match of the year for IWC in 2009. Johnny Gargano is another person that I love wrestling from that area. Man, there's so many. Like, there's just so many. Actually, the couple times that I've wrestled your last caller, Marion Fontaine, I've also had a great time wrestling with him. So,
Who wouldn't? He's such a nice guy.
Yeah. I mean, I could sit here all night talking about guys that I love wrestling from the Pittsburgh, Cleveland area. But yeah, Jimmy DeMarco, Johnny Gargano, Fontaine, Jason Gorey's another one I always love wrestling. So yeah, I would say those guys.
I kind of have another question if I could ask.
Go for it.
What's up?
I was wondering, like back in the 70s, the 80s, there was more managers involved in wrestling. How do you feel about the idea that there's not as many managers involved in even the independent promotions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of managers, especially from the 80s, like Bobby the Brain Heenan, you know, dude, one of my all-time favorites. So, I mean, I think it would be great if, you know, there were more managers. Like, it's starting to pop up a little bit. Like, Larry Dallas is doing the manager thing right now in the East Coast.
Larry Dallas rules.
Yeah, I mean, he's creating a name for himself. So hopefully, maybe he'll open the door and maybe we can have a throwback and maybe that'll be in vogue again to be a manager. Actually, I thought, you know, since retiring from wrestling, like, Jimmy DeMarco would be someone that would be great as a manager for somebody if he was ever interested, you know. So
he would be a killer manager. You're right about that.
That's what I'm saying. He's such a unique personality. Anybody listening right now, go on YouTube and look up Jimmy DeMarco and just watch the guy's promos. Just so natural and so entertaining. It's like, if he's going to retire from the ring, he needs to still be in the business in some form, and I think manager would be right up his alley.
Absolutely.
All right.
That's a great point, Shima. By the way, I'm looking forward to seeing you on the 27th.
Absolutely, man. I'll see you there.
All right, brother, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. When we had Joe Zaloni on here a couple weeks ago to talk about the ECWA Super 8 event, when you got that call, was it one of those chills up your back type situation? Because it's one of the longest standing tournaments around.
Yeah, I'll say this, man. Like, I was very happy. Like, I was honored. It was so cool because, like, I cut a promo for the Super 8 where I had talked about my three goals when I initially got into wrestling were that I wanted to wrestle in Japan, I wanted to wrestle in Mexico, and I wanted to compete in the Super 8 tournament. Well, I had wrestled in Japan, you know, eventually, in Mexico. So I was like, you know, two out of three is not bad. The Super 8 hadn't really had the hype in the last couple of years that it used to. So I was like, all right, well, you know, I didn't make it to the Super 8. But, you know, I've done some other tournaments. So I was just like, all right, you know, two out of three is not bad. And then to actually get the call for the Super 8, and I'm like, that's so cool. Like, all three of those things that a 16-year-old kid, you know, said he wanted to accomplish in wrestling, like, all of them came true. You know, and how often do you get to see someone get exactly what they want? So, I mean, it was awesome for me to get that call and be invited to the Super 8, because the tournament, like, I've known about the prestige of the Super 8, you know. I've known about its reputation. I've seen it in the magazines, and I've seen, like, the past tournaments. So, dude, to be invited for that was just a big honor, and it was definitely, you know, a great experience for me. I'm glad I can say I was a part of it.
Yeah. We have a chat room question. Kevin Celtic wants to know, where did you find your current theme song of the remix of Goldust's theme? Is he reading into things? Is that really Goldust's theme you're coming out to?
In AIW, yes. I like to have a different theme song in every promotion that I wrestle for. But you know what? That's something I didn't mention earlier. Goldust would actually probably be somewhat of an influence on my early character too. It's the way he pushed the envelope, the androgynous character. And that was something that was different to me. And I kind of inspired me. But I found this Goldust rap song because I'm a huge hip hop fan. Like, I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to hip hop. So
nothing wrong with
found,
that.
Yeah, I had found a rap song where they had taken Goldust's theme song, rapped over the beat, and I thought, like, man, this is so cool. Like, somebody should use this as theme music. And I'm like, wait, maybe I should use this as theme music. So I tried it one time just to see the response, and there's a lot of people that have told me, like, dude, that's really cool music. So I'm like, maybe I'll just keep using it. So, that's where I found it.
Yeah, I know I'm opening a major can of worms here, Jersey Girl, so I'm going to go for it. We have a Marshall University graduate listening in here who actually went to the same school at the same time as current NWA National Heavyweight Champion Chance Prophet. She wants to know, what are your thoughts on the Marshall-West Virginia rivalry? Does it still exist as crazy as it used to?
It might. I don't know. Like, I will say this. I don't really follow sports at all. Like, I go here to WVU. It's the college I go to. But I have not been to a football game since, like, 2007. So, yeah, I'm sure that rivalry is still very much existing. But I'm really not in the loop with that. I don't go to the football games. I don't participate in, you know, the college experience. So part of that is pro wrestling to blame. So.
We had mentioned Larry Dallas before. We had him and Rebbe Sky on in April to promote the event that happened at the BB King in Times Square. One of our chat room residents actually wanted to know, what did you think of your match with Jimmy Jacobs, and what did you think overall of the venue that was used?
Oh, it was awesome. Like, I thought that place was so cool. I'll tell you what, the cool thing for me was, you know, it's always awesome to go to Times Square, to go to New York City. And we're driving down 42nd Street, trying to find somewhere to park, and we passed the building. We didn't even realize, you know, we were there. We passed the building, and on the marquee in Times Square, it says, Evolve Pro Wrestling. That was just so cool to see on the marquee in Times Square, you know, this wrestling show being advertised. So, you know, that was awesome, and I thought the venue was cool. The crowd was great that night. It was a good atmosphere in there, a really good atmosphere. So I was happy with the match with Jimmy Jacobs. I mean, I won, so of course.
Excellent.
I'm happy. And it was good. National Geographic was there filming the whole thing, so look for that on national TV in a few months.
Before we go back to the tournament to wrap it up, someone just pointed out to me on the Shima Zion Facebook page that you were actually a part of an FCW developmental camp here in Tampa. Can you talk about that? What was that experience like? Did you take anything from it?
Yeah, that was a great learning experience. I felt like I learned more in those 4 days down there than I have in the last year on the indies. But, yeah, basically, I saw that FCW was having an invitation-only tryout in Tampa. So I thought, well, you know, I'll just see if maybe I'll get accepted. So I sent my pictures, sent my resume, and, you know, just wanted to see what would happen. Like, I didn't know that I could even afford it, but I'm like, well, let's just see if I even get accepted. Well, surprisingly to me, I did get accepted. So I'm like, wow, now I want to do this. So I chose to go there instead of getting a new car, because I had two options. I could get a new car, or I could go to Florida and do this. So I chose Florida, and it was amazing. I got to learn from Steve Kern, Norman Smiley, who was amazing, Billy Kidman and Dr. Tom Pritchard, and all kinds of people popped in and offered advice. Jim Ross was there to watch the matches, John Laurinaitis. John Cena even appeared for one day. So there's a lot of people, it was a lot of pressure, I'll say that. And it was a great experience for me.
Yeah. this event, when you first heard that, we asked Marion about this, and he kind of had a tongue-in-cheek answer. When the locker room was first approached and said, so we're going to do this invitational thing and we're going to base it on former WWF announcer and current New York DJ Todd Pettengill, did you scratch your head and go, no one's going to get this? Or did you think, that's absolutely brilliant, I love it, and why didn't I think of it?
Well, I kind of like, I was kind of hesitant with how I felt about it, just because I looked at it as, well, if you're going to have this tournament about Todd Pettengill, he better be there. I'm like, he better be there. If he's not, I'm like, well, what's the point? Is it just for the comedy factor, just to get some buzz, some attention? So, I mean, I think it's pretty interesting. Like, they've definitely gotten some buzz off naming the tournament after Todd Pettengill. But me, personally, I still want him to be there. Like, I want Todd Pettengill to raise my hand when I win the tournament. That's the world I want to live in.
Your first round opponent, as mentioned, was Paul London. Forecast for this, is this to date one of the bigger opponents you've had in your career, or is he just some jabroni in the way of you getting to the invitational final?
Oh, dude, it's absolutely one of the bigger opponents I've ever faced off against. I mean, that's a pretty big deal for my first round opponent. Like, I've definitely got it rough. I've definitely got it rough in the first round. Paul London, man. I mean, I've been watching the guy for years, so I kind of know what to expect as far as his offense goes. But, I mean, he probably has never seen me wrestle before, so he doesn't know what he's in for. But I'm very excited for this opportunity. Very excited that AIW is giving me the opportunity to step in the ring with Paul London, man. It's awesome.
Is there anyone else, the other 22 that are on this roster? As I said, it's Lewis Linden, Flip Kendrick are here, Sanjay Dutt's here, Sugar Dunkerton, Colt Cabana, Marion's involved. You've got the Chris brothers. You've got Jimmy Jacobs and BJ Whitmer. Is there anyone that you're sitting there going, okay, if I get past London, okay, I mean, Pondo's in this thing. Is there anyone you're going, I want them in the next round? Or is there someone sitting there going, I don't want to face them at all? I'll bribe their first round opponent to win.
I mean, I'll take on any and all challengers. So I'm not intimidated or worried by whoever I would get to in the next round, even if it was someone like Madman Pondo. Like, I think that would be an interesting match. You know, me versus Madman Pondo, like, I don't think anybody would ever expect to see that match happen in a million years. So that might be interesting. I'd love to get my hands on Jimmy Jacobs again. That would be really cool. And, I mean, a Flip Kendrick, Lewis Linden, I'd like to have a match where I can just showcase my high-flying abilities. Because I think sometimes people that haven't seen much of me don't realize that I can be quite the aerial wrestler when I want to be. So
yeah.
It would be interesting to have one of those kind of matches, too. Just go crazy.
Yep. The event is this Friday and Saturday, Absolute Intense Wrestling. Some people were hitting me up going like, are they doing the Ted Petty thing? And I'm like, not anywhere close, friends. It is Todd Pettengill Invitational. It is at the AIW Arena, which is the St. Gregory's Byzantine Hall, 12920 Madison Avenue, not in New York City, in Lakewood, Ohio. You can go to shopaiwwrestling.com. I'm mad because only 156 people like your page, and we need to up that. So we'll list it in our press release for tomorrow. If you're listening now, go there and like him, because if you don't, I'm going to be mad at you. Travel dates are listed there. Where are we heading to after this event? What's the next big town for you? Is it IWC?
Yeah, it would be IWC on May 27th in Pittsburgh, and then Baltimore, Maryland for RCW, where I'll be taking on Adam Cole, who's currently a buzzworthy name on the independent scene. So that might be something for people to check out. And, I don't know, yeah, I just got Twitter back too, so, if you don't like my Facebook page, at least follow me on Twitter. It's, my name is Shima Zion Sucks. So type that in and you should find me.
And you can go to ICWWrestling.com for information
IWC.
On that event. Alright, coming up after the break, looks like our friend Jamal, also known as Kevin Scott, will be joining us. Phil Strum may or may not be joining us here. Coming up on Our World of Wrestling Radio on Guns N' Roses night. We'll be back on the other side of the break.
Professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Mark Berry. Hannah Christou.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Woogerman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hey, this is the Spud Guy, the real voice of Wrestle Talk Radio right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Listen every Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern as we get an in-depth with the world of wrestling. And as always, you can find me there, the real voice of Wrestle Talk Radio, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Do you have a certain passion? Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio, or anything goes. Or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talkie Talk Live. All you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
Do you have a business that you are looking to take online but have no idea what an HTML or a JPEG is? Do you currently have a website that is in need of an overhaul? Or do you have a website that needs updating but you don't have the time to do so? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then you need to check out WTRProductions.tk, where you can get quality web design and management at an affordable rate. Looking to get the lowdown on all the services we offer? Then shoot us off an email by checking out our contact section so that we can help you get started building your online home. WTR Productions. High quality work for an affordable rate. Built the way you want. Located at www.wtrproductions.tk.
Hey, Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show. So tune in. Listen. I demand it.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
It's me, it's that D-O-double-G mobbing once again with Wild Talk Radio. And if you ain't down with that, I got two words for ya. Suck it!
Welcome back to Online World Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. It's so funny. We had him on last. We had BG James on last week to talk about the Tribute to the Fairgrounds event, which if you go to the Mid-South Wrestling Boards and the Georgia Wrestling History Board, Larry Goodman is a great, great person who goes to events like I used to, covered a thing, and it's amazing now that all of a sudden everybody's interviewing BG James, and I'm going, okay, I know the folks in Stanford are listening in. I think the folks in Nashville are listening in. If you've seen the spoilers for the next couple days at TNA, which we'll talk about in a few moments here. As mentioned, All I Will Wrestling Radio, if you're in our chat room tonight, Sir Rockin has been dropping hints on you about he's coming. Yes, it is a former WWE World Champion. No, I ain't telling you yet who the hell it is. Not till the end. Not going there yet. Spug and Mace, not here tonight, so I bring in the dynamic duo known as Phil Strum of the Poughkeepsie Journal, who has an amazing blog called Under the Ring, and his tag team partner, who was a part of that, but however, the folks at TNA Wrestling pissed them off one too many times, so we're honored to have him here. He's known in our credits as Jamal, but it's Bug and Mace in here, so Kevin Scott is here tonight. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Definitely my pleasure.
And Phil's joining us after the Lightning lost. Yes! Bye-bye, Tim.
Are you losing on there, though? You're not behind the Lightning?
The Lightning. I was in the building when they won the Cup in 04 as an employee, and after that, it was just like, I don't know. It'll be an interesting series, especially now that they're tied up there. Don't worry, we'll talk hockey with Phil a little bit, just because I want to pick his brain about a story he passed along about the New York Islanders, which is an interesting endeavor as it is. This past week, wrestling-wise, was very awkward. We're going to dust the surface of the TNA, the last TNA Wrestling Impact, as it was called. We'll talk about the Sacrifice pay-per-view. But to get to the Sacrifice pay-per-view, we had to go through the last Thursday's event. Had a very awkward tag match of Miss Tessmacher and Mickey James defeating Madison Rayne and Tara, and that led to some stuff that happened on Sunday. We had amazing... Oh, wait, no, I can't call him that. I have to call him Sangriento. Defeated Suicide, who's rumored to be Teddy Hart. That's one of the rumors going around the Wild Talk Radio Network offices. I can't confirm or deny it, but it was just one of those moments that you go, huh?
I thought it was Chris Daniels in there. That thing has changed so many times I've completely lost track of who's in there.
It was Chris Daniels. At one point it was Homicide. At one point it was Kazarian.
Yoshi, then, I think, for a minute.
Yeah. There's the kid who is playing Kato to Samoa Joe was in there too for a while.
Okada.
Yeah, Kazuchika Okada. Thank you for me jogging my own brain there.
Why is that character even still around? I have no idea.
The video game died a long time ago. I think I'm the only one that actually owns a copy of it still. before we get to the super cool reason, Crimson defeated Abyss and Samoa Joe. We had the network representative, who we'll talk about in a second, set up a number one contender battle royal to face the champion at Slammiversary, and that would be your friend and mine, Mace's least favorite wrestler, Mr. Anderson. When he came down the aisle, did either one of you, before we talk about the actual appearance of Mick Foley, to Phil first, I know you don't watch it as much, but when you first hear this through the message boards and chatter and people coming up to you in the office talking, going, so they got this network rep thing, who do you think it is? Who were some of the names that you popped in, and was Foley one of them?
I figured it was going to be Dixie Carter, but then once they said she, I kind of threw that one out the window, because I figured, you know, because it's Vince Russo booking, you have to book a swerve for the sake of having a swerve, not for something that makes sense. But absolutely no one comes up to me and talks to me about TNA. So, but in terms of, I don't know, it totally seemed logical to me. I didn't really have too many ideas on it. I didn't really think too much about it, because when you think too much and watch TNA, you tend to get in trouble. But
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. He's good in the authority figure role. He's done it a million times before. And in TNA, and TNA's had about... Oh my God! I mean, if you look all the way back and went back when you were going to the, you know, the tapings and stuff and the pay-per-views, I mean, there's been so many authority figures in TNA. I mean, all the way back to like Eric Watts, Don Callis, everybody.
Jerry Jarrett, go all the way back to the weekly pay-per-views in Nashville. Buy the Best of the Asylum Years DVD. You'll actually go, crap, they actually had wrestling in TNA at one point. Look at that.
The Championship Committee on Fox Sportsnet. Remember that?
Yeah, to Kevin, Foley a good choice here, or was there someone else in your mind that you're going, you know, he's not doing anything, she's not doing anything, let her go out there and be the, I mean, I would have been fine with SoCal Val doing it.
Oh, I would never even thought of that, but I guess that would have been okay. I was in the same boat as Phil. I was expecting Dixie Carter at first, and then when that came out, it wasn't a huge surprise, I guess because, you know, he has experience filling that role for a show. I'm not really for it or against it. I'm glad he's back on TV because I am a fan, but I'll wait to see what happens.
We talked about it a couple weeks ago here with Spug and Mace, and my feeling is still the same. You know, who else do you got? At one point we were bantering after the show and we didn't talk about it live on the air of, you know, Russo did it for a while in Nashville. Why not? But Vinnie Rue hasn't been seen for so long. Some of this audience may be scratching their head going, who's that dude? I mean, would that have shocked either one of you if Russo had come back?
I think I actually probably would have watched the show more often. Just for the train wreck factor.
I'm not sure if TNA's audience is so large that they have too many people that wouldn't know who he is, because I think at this point they've scared off, and this is kind of what I touched on a little bit this week on my blog, they've scared off so much of their audience that has given them a shot that I think that pretty much all that's left is diehards.
Well,
I don't really know that they have a lot more than that.
Kevin, so I mean, I seem to be the only one that's still, if I wasn't doing this show, I don't know if I'd be watching.
And the same thing for me with my blog. I've been watching the show every week, but if I wasn't, you know, if I wasn't blogging, I mean, they are making, you know, and I don't want to be too harsh, because whatever, but, because it doesn't really bother me so much, but they're making, like, late era WCW look like a masterpiece right now in terms of logic.
Well, it, in my opinion, they have been for quite some time. I just got to the point where I didn't want to watch it anymore.
Yeah, the other...
I was just going to say about the rebranding, too. It's just like, you know, oh, cool, we're going to focus on wrestling now. Why is the company that has, like, 70 minutes or more, or possibly way more than that on a show of not wrestling, focusing on wrestling? I know when I think of, oh, it's wrestling, it's pure wrestling, the first things I think of are Miss Tessmacher, Abyss, and, you know, like, whoever the... China, you know? Come on. Let's get serious here.
Yeah, were either one of you surprised when she was revealed as this mistress or business partner? Then, unless you saw her on Celebrity Rehab or The Surreal Life or whatever it was, and certain adult entertainment venues that Spug may have gone down.
I may know that myself.
Oh, see, that's on the best of Kevin Scott's visit to OTL. You can find that on the home site of Wrestle Talk. WildTalkRadio.com. To Phil first, I mean, at first you think, God, she hasn't been on TV in any capacity. I mean, my stepdaughter wasn't even born when she disappeared from WWE TV. That tells you how long it's been.
I don't think she's going to make one bit of difference of whether that show is successful, unsuccessful, good or bad. I don't begrudge anybody an opportunity of having a shot. You know, worse people than Joni Lauer have probably gotten second chances in wrestling. When I saw it, obviously, I read spoilers just so I know what's going on. And, you know, when I saw that spoiler, I said, you know, that might be... I was trying to think, is that the stupidest move that TNA has ever made? Like, I was actually going back through my mind and trying to think of all the other stupid things they've ever done, and bringing back China was one of them. It's up there, but, you know, I don't know. She hasn't wrestled in years. You know, that match that she had on Sunday was, you know, her first match. God, I don't even know how long. But, you know, they bring back all of these old stars, and they think that their old familiarity is going to bring them some bit of recognition, and they still haven't hired that one person who's actually moved the needle yet.
Yeah, I mean, we joked about it here with Spug and Mace, and Kevin's been listening on and off after he was battling his health issues. That short of Kurt's mistress, Raka Khan, showing up, and his rumored mistress in WWE, Trish Stratus, showing up, you really couldn't shock the crap out of us. But here comes Joni Lauer at China, which I'm more amazed that WWE didn't hold on to that damn name. I mean, were you surprised at all, Kevin?
I'm not sure surprised is the right word. I think after all the criticism that TNA gets for getting every WWE cast off and having people like Jeff Hardy in their condition, yeah, getting China might have been the best decision they could make. I mean, does anyone think about what that looks like? Because granted, maybe she has a legitimate claim to having her status from way back when, but most people nowadays know her from her reality appearances where she's a train wreck.
Yeah, this wouldn't have had anything to do with a certain Karma Awesome Kong showing up on WWE TV, right?
Possibly.
Bringing the original badass woman, haha.
Kong's already been booked better probably in like a 3-week span of WWE than she was in the entire like last year she was in TNA combined, so, you know.
It's a shame.
Well, the funny thing is, my pick, what I thought the mistress was going to be, and then I read later on that this was actually what they thought too. Like, they wanted it to be Lindsay Hayworth, the Aloisa woman. Ooh. From NXT. But then they got cold feet, and they were like, let's put Joni Lauer in there instead.
Yeah, Omega, who's on the Wrestle Talk radio show, I was able to partake in their post-TNA event, and he said the same thing. He's like, when he saw the match that we'll talk about in a second or two here, he said, oh, could be worse. Could have been Aloisa. And I'm going, don't say crap like that, dude.
That might actually even better, though, because, I mean, in that role, basically you just want the largest, most intimidating-looking person you can find. Wouldn't that have made sense? I mean, she can't wrestle at all, but neither can Karen Angle, so what difference does it make?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a very awkward situation. The third thing that came out of this event, and that would be something a little dear to my heart for knowing him all the years, was the arrival of Wildcat Chris Harris as the mystery opponent, partner, to set up the beer money matchup. He obviously got a lot of crap from the Braden Walker thing, and we had him on a few weeks ago, and obviously there's still that bitter pill there. But overall, when you look at the pay-per-view match he had, and it was logical to bring him back because of now Beer Money has had such success in the almost 4 years they've been together. It's almost inevitable to compare them to America's Most Wanted, at least in my mind it is. Unfortunately, as you know, some folks that are listening to us for the first time don't know, I've covered TNA wrestling since day one. The fan base that's in Orlando, Kevin, that may not be like you and I who own some DVDs and have watched the weekly pay-per-views, that I'm sure some of them were just kind of sitting there going, and I feel bad to say this about Chris, we were scratching their head going, who's that guy?
It came off kind of bad on, but I saw the clip not too long ago where he came out, and it was obvious that the pipe and noise and everything, and the crowd just looking like they're completely silent. It's a shame, because I'm a huge fan of AMW, love Chris Harris. I remember, I can't remember exactly what year it was, but when he had that short little solo run where he was chasing Jarrett's title, really thought he was going to be the next big thing for the company, but then we all know how it happens with young talent. It's kind of sad the way things have turned for him in terms of his career, but I'm hoping, you know, it gets back in shape a little bit more and comes through with something big for him. It would be nice to see him do something.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping with. And he was not a part of TV last night, and it looks like he was not a part of this week's TV, and looks like that Miss China was not a part of either one. Since Spug and Mace are not here, we're gonna stay spoiler free other than that stuff, and we'll leave it at that. But to go to the pay-per-view real quick for fans that didn't see it, we'll run this as fast as I can, because this was recapped the other night on Russ Talk Radio. As Mace and Omega said, if you didn't go to Vegas and bet on this pay-per-view like we did with the recent Extreme Rules pay-per-view, if you got any of these matches wrong in your pool, you needed to get a smack to the face. Mexican America defeated Ink Inc., which made us all go, you know, if they weren't going to win, who the hell put that damn flag up there in the first place? We had the Jarretts come out and go, no, Karen has a sprain and a fracture, which sent a lot of us going for a medical book going, did he really say sprain and fracture? Yes, Triple J said sprain and fracture in the same sentence, kids. The Brian Kendrick, Obi-Wan, smoke a lot, defeated Robbie E., still one of the best fist pumpers ever. We had a match that involves slavery. And in this day and age, that's pretty amazing that Vince Russo's going, all right, we need a slavery angle. We're going to make Tara a slave. Cool. Knockout champion Mickey James came in like the north to the south going, no, 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 she's free, by defeating Madison Rayne, however not taking a god-awful tiara off her head. Both Mace and Omega and Sir Rock and our executive producer and technical producer were going like, does that look like a really interesting phallic symbol on her head? I was like, I don't know what they're talking about, but okay. Your World X Division champion at this point, before we get to TV that's taped last night and tonight, Frank of the Future Kazarian defeated Max Buck of Generation Me. Goldberg, oh no, he's not Goldberg, he's Crimson. Crimson defeated Abyss. Your TNA World Tag Team Champions, Beer Money, did defeat Matt Hardy and Wildcat Chris Harris. One of the more peculiar matches of the evening, in a no DQ style match, Tommy Dreamer defeated AJ Styles. In a match that I'm amazed was semi-main event, Kurt Angle and China defeated the Jarretts. And once again, still amazingly, your TNA World Heavyweight Champion, Sting, defeated Rob Van Dam. Of course, Mr. Anderson had to get his 2 cents in, come down to the ring, get involved there. Amazingly, they never mentioned, by the way, if you bought the pay-per-view, you get to talk to Kenny Boy online. Anything at this pay-per-view, Kevin, jump out at you that you're going, this felt like another episode of Impact or an old WCW Clash of the Champions. Did this feel like an actual pay-per-view to you?
No, not at all. I mean, besides all the matches being quite predictable, going from the very beginning, you had Inc. and a Mexican American match. It was a decent match, but it felt like it should have been an Impact. Go through the entire list, say things like about pretty much everything, maybe outside of Kaz versus Max Buck, but they didn't really do anything to make, at least me, think that should be something you should care about. It was a very long Impact that you had to actually pay for. I'm getting a little tired of that.
Sorry if I was laughing while you were running down the card, if you could hear that at all, but I realized while you were running down that card that in the top three matches on the show, the winners were Tommy Dreamer, Kurt Angle, China, and Sting. building up some big young stars down there in Orlando, aren't they?
Damn right. I think
that battle royal they had was with the last part was Jarrett, Angle, Dreamer, Bully Ray, and Anderson. That was the last five you're going to represent for the number one contender? Come on.
Damn right. All those great stars that helped build that promotion. Get out of the ring. We need the WWE guys in here. It's almost how it feels. I'm sorry. I'm voicing my opinion. I'm allowed to. I have a microphone and a really large audience that loves my show. Yeah. This show.
There's a use for using ex-WWE guys, but none of them, it's not for anything that they use them for. It's like, if you're going to use them to build up your own and homegrown talent, I was going to say, but like, the homegrown talent that they pick to push is just like, it's just head-scratching. It's like, I don't mind giving a guy like Crimson a shot, but they're sitting there going, oh, he hasn't lost any singles matches yet. And then I was thinking to myself, I've only seen him in like two singles matches, and one of them was against like Murphy. So who cares? Like, why should I care about this guy? He looks like a jabroni when he's in the ring with almost anybody.
Oh, just ask someone who hasn't seen the program recently. What's Samoa Joe doing?
Good question.
Crimson is like getting in Joe's face over the fact that when Joe started in TNA, he had a winning streak, and it's like not as good as like Crimson's, I guess, now. So like he's like bragging to Joe that he's better than him. And then, so of course, they had the match on Impact. I think it was like 2.5 minutes long in a triple threat match with Crimson, Joe, and Abyss, and Crimson pinned Joe clean. So there goes that angle.
Well, that exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Don't forget, June 12th is Slammiversary. It looks like it will be in Orlando. They did not make a difference, an announcement on there. The only match booked so far is your TNA World Heavyweight Champion Sting. I'm just getting the willies off of me there because I still had to say that. Nothing against Steve Borden, the performer, but at 600 years old in wrestling years, okay. Taking on Mr. Anderson, of the god of internet radio, Sorokin, is mostly silent during this show. He will be picking lottery numbers down the road for us, because if you listen to the show, Sorokin does chime in from time to time. And he chimed in a while back and said, mark my words, he did his Big Lebowski market dude moment, where he said, at some point in this calendar year, Sting is going to defend the TNA World Heavyweight Championship against Hulk Hogan. Spug Mace and I, after we could stop laughing and almost falling out of our chairs and giving ourselves concussions, this is the rumor around the campfire, and we'll use this to wrap up our TNA talk. And I know Spug and Mace would be going, this was 29 minutes longer than it ever should have been. The rumor around the campfire is your main event in October for Bound for Glory will be Sting versus Hulk Hogan. However, before you get to that, the July event, which I think might be Destination X. I may have the names wrong because TNA, unlike the WWE, doesn't give away the dates and stuff for their events to the end of the year. Boo-hoo-hoo, TNA, I don't like you for that. A July pay-per-view match of Sting defending the world championship against Nature Boy Ric Flair. I know the two of you are running to your pay-per-view provider right now and putting a pre-advance on that.
Is this serious?
That is what Sir Rockin has...
It's August. It's August, Alan.
Oh, August. It's the August one. Okay.
August pay-per-view. And Destination X, I believe, is July 10th. So.
Oh, okay. Book your Destination X flight now. Hopefully that event will be awesome. We've totally just made Phil and Kevin toss their cookies, and hopefully we can get an intern in here to clean that up.
The Sting and Flair is going to build up to Sting and Hogan in 2011? Are you kidding me? Like, do they look at their roster and think to themselves, man, let's not, like, push Bobby Roode or Chris Daniels or, like, anyone. But, my God, we have Sting, Hogan, and Flair. We got to get them in the main event because that's going to change us from a 1-0 on Spike every week and under 10,000 buys on pay-per-view or something. And what is Hulk Hogan even thinking with his back the way it is, going on a show that gets under 10,000 buys on pay-per-view? Are you really going to risk that on a show that literally no one is watching?
They really needed to make the Triple Threat and Ultimate X. That's the only way I'm going to watch.
They probably tried, and they probably vetoed Russo.
I want to see that match. I would pay good money to see that.
Flair would try.
Yeah, we actually have in our chat room right now somebody whose screen name is Nature Boy Woo, and he just said, "You just hurt my feelings." I am a mega Nature Boy Ric Flair mark. However, that's not Ric Flair on TV. That's an older person who's in the middle of his fourth marriage, who's got three alimonies to pay for. I don't even know if he pays on the first wife anymore, but...
Was he married to High Spots, too?
I'm not sure. They may have actually had one. He may actually...
Because he's paying them now, too, so...
Yeah, I mean, I want to notice, Jersey Girl, some of the folks in the chat room are bringing up, I want to notice you have to pay rights to the Walt Disney World every time he mentions Space Mountain in his promos, because he really would be in deep crap of debt here. Jersey Girl wants to know when they're going to start hiring Tough Enough rejects. I know Ryan Howe works out of the Kentucky area. I think Michael is his name, was recently down here working in Tampa. Some of those kids are actually on their way to here in Florida to finish off their Tough Enough stuff. So if you live in Tampa and you can go by the FCW facility, go buy it. Before we get into Raw, SmackDown, and the pay-per-view that'll be this Sunday, this is an interesting note that came out that Mexico, the country, will be getting a live Raw and the SmackDown tapings for the first time ever. As WWE announced, they will be taking their shows south of the border October 15th and 16th. The venue is the Palacio de los Deportes Arena. And these are actually going to be taped during the weekend rather than on the same day and airing on tape delay. So book your travel arrangements now. And as Mark Jindrak, Marco Corleone told us, and don't drink the water, whatever you do, or Montezuma's Revenge will get you and make you watch old WCW back in the day. Normally, Spug and Mace, since they are trained professional wrestlers, would chime in here with the WWE Tough Enough program. And I had brought up a week or two ago when Ivelisse left the contest due to injury. She wasn't alone, because how did the injury bug hit this program? My personal favorite, Martin, taken out last night with a fracture in his left leg, which when you watch it on TV, doesn't look like a damn thing. My wife happened to be sitting in the room doing something completely different, and I cringed going, "What the crap was that?" And she goes, "What did he do?" And I'm like, he stood up. She's like, yeah, but did he hit a move? And I was like, no, he stood up. And unfortunately, I'm not sure if fans even know about this, so I'll break the fourth wall down for a second here. And this is one of the things that does irk me. Christina, if you don't know it, fans, is also known as Christina Crawford. She's also known as Alicia Fox's real-life sister. The thing that irks me is this kid was actually under a WWE developmental contract and was let go and now magically appears on their TV show. Well, she injured her left ankle or leg last night. And Bill DeMott tried to throw the kid that was in the ring with them under the bus because she seems to be his golden child and whatnot. When they're saying, oh, we went for a cross body. And it's like, dude, double sledge from the top. Watch it. Are either one of you, to Phil first and then to Kim, are either one of you watching Tough Enough at all? And if you are, what have you thought of this season so far?
I've actually watched every episode. I made it my point. I think that the production values and the fact that they were looking for some people with experience were more encouraging about the prospects of some of these wrestlers than some of the previous Tough Enoughs were. Some of the guys, I mean, if you look back over those first few, it's like some of those people have been long out of the business for years now and never even got past maybe a year or so. But I like the show. They do silly things like, you know, serving lunch on roller skates and ropes courses and playing basketball with dwarves and all strange stuff like that. But for the most part, I like watching the training. I think that they've made the show pretty interesting. I was a little bothered that they, you know, AJ, they blamed, you know, the injury. Obviously, he wasn't doing well at all or standing out or whatever they said. But they blamed Christina Crawford's injury on him. But Christina Crawford was basically the reason that Ivelisse Velez got eliminated because she botched a leapfrog on her. And they did not blame that particularly on her. They just let her stay. And then, you know, they kind of mentioned it a little bit. And then they're like, oh, but she's doing so much better now. And then the next show, she's hurt. So I'm like, well, things are happening. I don't know. I'm enjoying the show. I don't know if any of these people are going to be, like, big standout superstars or anything, because I don't think any of them are... I mean, they're more interesting, I guess, than some of the NXT guys, but just because it's a television show and you actually get to know them a little bit. But nobody really has a great, like, you know, wonderful standout look, which I guess does work in your favor with WWE, because everybody does look the same now. But, I really enjoyed watching it. Steve Austin is phenomenal. He's just fantastic. But that's my thoughts on Tough Enough.
Yeah. Kevin?
Well, as Phil was saying, the people in the show I have absolutely no connection with in terms of entertainment value. So I kind of shied away from it. I watched the only episode I really watched the full thing was when Matt Cross was eliminated, and he was probably the only guy that I would have gave a damn about in the first place. For me, the idea of Tough Enough, I like the concept, the actual execution of it. It's a little bit off because, let's be honest, we're talking about something that's predetermined results kind of area. I've got into UFC mainly because of Ultimate Fighter, and I guess my love for that show kind of makes Tough Enough a little bit hard to watch.
Yeah, but Al Snow even said he was on Kayfabe Commentaries, did a DVD with him, a guest booker thing, and he came out and said, you know, I don't blame Ultimate Fight for basically ripping off our concept, more power to them, but, you know, it is what it is, as they say in radio terms. This kid being thrown under the bus like he was, little awkward. Jersey Girl in our chat room brought up that she thought Luke, I'm staying profanity free tonight. F Luke for his comments after Christina got hurt. It was such a prick answer he gave. Well, what else would you have wanted him to say? Oh, would a shot of him crying would have been better? I don't know.
Yeah, Alan, have you seen, I know it's been on YouTube and there's been some links around. Have you gotten to see Lance Storm's reality show that's airing up in Canada about his school?
Mace tried to provide me links to it, and I have to go to a site, but I haven't gotten there yet. Have you checked it out yet?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I got to see the first episode, and I think the second one was posted, but I honestly have been really busy, and I haven't gotten around to actually watching it yet because I'm watching everything else. But it's very good. I mean, it's a lot different than Tough Enough because, you know, obviously it's not, it's more of a documentary style, and it's about a wrestling school. So it's not, okay, you screw up, you get eliminated. It's more, okay, you screwed up, but now you got to learn from that, and you have to move forward. Otherwise, you're not going to get very far in this business. You actually get to see them, you know, working in front of crowds on some, you know, shows that he got them booked on, and it's refreshing. It's kind of like the original Tough Enough, like, again, just without any eliminations, nobody gets kicked off, and it's just, you know, this is what you have to do when you're in wrestling school, and, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's only a half hour show too, so it's a real quick,
Wow.
The time flies. So, and, yeah, he's got, I think the first two episodes, it might have been a third one now, I don't know, but, definitely recommend it. I know that the links have been posted up on YouTube, because if you like watching Tough Enough, this is an interesting, different take on the industry from the, breaking in, level.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to check that out. Poor SmackDown. We ended up with an interesting main event, which we'll talk about in a moment here too. Had Chavo Guerrero interfere in a match that I was actually surprised was good, because I figured, okay, after he had a horrible match that I thought with T.J. Wilson, known as Tyson Kidd, was going, okay, they gotta put the brakes on Sin Cara before somebody gets really messed up. And I actually liked this match with Daniel Bryan. I was very surprised. We had Kane defeat the Intercontinental Champion Wade Barrett by DQ. We had another interesting matchup of Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase in Legacy imploding. And of course we had a main event of World Champion Randy Orton and Christian defeating Sheamus and Mark Henry. And I know Mason Spug, if they were here with me, they'd be going, dude, we were this close to Michael Cole being wiped off the planet, and no, not by Jerry Lawler, kids. It would be by our favorite WWE superstar, Karma. Is this just going too far, Kevin, that it seems like any interaction the Divas have on TV now, this moron has to get involved? Especially, I mean, he confronts Layla here. He's blatantly doing it in matches now. Is this creative going, yeah, the Diva matches suck, and let's point it out? Or is this just a way to get rid of Cole? Maybe Karma does eventually take him out.
I'm crossing fingers that's the plan. But I remember one of the last times I actually watched Raw all the way through, there was a Divas match at, I'm going to say it was Eve or somebody else, and I really don't remember exactly what was going on. And about 30 seconds into it, Cole just started talking on the mic, and he just went through it, ripped them apart. And it seems like, granted, okay, yes, we all know the Divas matches aren't, you know, five stars, but why as a company would you present something that you know is horrible and then tell the audience that you know it's horrible? It makes absolutely no sense, and kind of makes you not want to watch a show.
I mean, does this bother you, Phil, as a fan of the product, that your lead heel announcer, no less, is openly crapping on this stuff?
I mean, I'm hoping it's part of an angle. I mean, it would seem that, you know, it would be natural, as, you know, for as sniveling and annoying of a character as Michael Cole is, to have one of the Divas of all people, like an Eve or maybe a Beth Phoenix, who I have no idea where she has been for the last couple of months because she's still on the roster. But, you know, if one of them, you know, put him in his place, or, you know, I'd heard, you know, one website, you know, mentioned, oh, maybe he can kind of, you know, channel Andy Kaufman and do the whole intergender thing and say he's better than everybody, and then they can all, you know, kind of kick his butt and humble him and stuff. The problem with the Cole character is that it's done. It's run its course already. It's already gone on way, way longer than I ever would have imagined that it would, you know, I mean, he's been a heel now for what, like almost half a year now, or maybe longer.
Close to it, yeah.
I mean, I guess embarrassing that this really, their matches are usually not great anyway, and I don't think that this is going to help anybody's confidence. And, you know, the thing is with wrestling, you get better the more you get in there and do it, or at least that's the way it's supposed to work. And if you're out there, you know, a women's wrestler once said to me that, you know, she got a lot of criticism for a lot of her work, And then she said, you know, I'd like to see somebody else, when they think they're going to get an 8-minute match, go out there to the gorilla position, and they're told, okay, you got a minute 15 to pull this one off. You know, you got all this stuff that you want to get in there, and then you get like 7 minutes shaved off your match when you're standing in the gorilla position. So, like, it's not easy being a diva, because you know what? They are trying to get better. They're probably the ones in the ring before the show and working with the agents and working with the experienced wrestlers and everything, but they do not get a large percentage of the show, and it's unfortunate that they don't have that time to work things out, because otherwise, if they keep going the direction they're going right now, they're never going to have somebody like a Trish Stratus again. They're never going to have any of those, you know, really special talents that could be a little bit different on your show.
Don't mind my phone going off in the background. Whoever that is, go away! Working! Then we had the fun that is Monday Night Raw. And what better way to open the show than with a wrestling... No, not a wrestling match. It's more damn promo stuff. Ugh. John Cena, Alex Riley and The Miz. Raw GM by an iPad, which... hey, Cole? That's a laptop, dude. Unless that's an iPad and I'm missing it. I don't know. I don't own one. I'm a PC guy. Right, Microsoft, I'll do one of your damn commercials. They said to him, all right, cool. Since Cena picked the stip at the pay-per-view, you get to pick one with anyone on the roster tonight. Okay, cool. We had a lot of non-title matches tonight, and I guess that's apropos since we're going into an over-the-limit event from Seattle this Sunday. You had CM Punk defeat Kofi Kingston in a non-title. Kelly Kelly defeats Brianna of the Bella Twins, also non-title. Karma comes and poor Nikki or Brie or whichever one it was. That implant buster, it was Nikki, okay.
Three ran away with the belt, so.
Yeah, we take Karma once again, and it's almost like a fun thing now. You're sitting there, the match starts, and you're going, alright, where's the stopwatch here? Because you know she's coming. Not sure how she's coming, but she's coming. But spares Kelly Kelly in an awkward situation. Can we read into this at all? Do you think that she fancies her as I'll save you for later on to destroy?
Well, if it was TNA, that would be the angle.
That is true.
You have to think that everybody's lesbian to TNA.
Yeah, or that, or you know, we have the, and I'm going to go down this road because as Avenue Q once told us, everybody's a little bit racist sometimes. Do we have the black woman making a white woman her slave at all here, or am I just throwing darts at the board going, that sounds good, but Dave Lagana would be sitting there going, no, is that way too much for WWE PG to go?
If there's a God, yes. I don't think I hope that's not the direction they're going, but, yeah, that'd be kind of interesting for the PG audience.
We were unfortunate or fortunate, depending how you look at it, to sit through another Alberto Del Rio Rey Mysterio match. Mysterio wins this one via DQ and helps set up the pay-per-view match, which we'll tease in a moment or two here. We have Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler sign their pay-per-view contract, which we'll talk about in a moment. On another non-title match, the World Tag Team Champions Big Show and Kane were defeated by David Otunga, or as we sometimes like to call him around here, Mr. Jennifer Hudson. And Michael McGillicuddy, still not comfortable with that name all these months later. We had The Miz go pretty much around the WWE locker room looking for anybody to go against his opponent John Cena, and ends up choosing Jack Swagger in a no-holds-barred match. Interesting, considering not many holds were barred if I watched this match properly.
I think they were all barred during the break, because during the break it looked like, you know, throwing them into the coal mine, throwing them into the table, throwing them into the post. Nobody was really doing anything outlandish or anything, but I guess they had to say it was a stipulation of some sort, so that's what they did. What struck me odd on Raw was that you just mentioned all the non-title matches. Every single champion lost, and not a single one of them is defending those titles against the people who beat them on Sunday.
Yeah, and that's a shame. But hey, welcome to WWE. They're currently filming, and they may have just finished SmackDown, so the results aren't up there yet to announce any other pay-per-view matches. We're going to guess at a possible Sin Cara versus Chavo Guerrero match. Sorokin said it was teased, but
that's what it seems like, just by the results.
Okay, so we may possibly get another Sin Cara match with the mood lighting that he has. I don't understand that one. I almost want to look around and go, am I at an Italian restaurant or something? What the crap?
If they're really worried about covering up mistakes that much.
Imagine if all the Divas matches had lighting like that.
Yeah.
Oh, there'd be people going crazy in certain households in this country.
I didn't see that botched bulldog by Kelly Kelly there. There was a blue light on the ring.
Yeah, there's certain guys sitting somewhere in a house right now going, bring the mood lighting on for the Divas, baby.
That would be funny if they just made it like mood lighting, and then it was just there to cover all the botched spots because they didn't want to teach them at all.
That's
brilliant. They got to do that. You got to patent that quick.
Absolutely. We'll work on that one. Rey Mysterio versus R-Truth is on this event. We also have the core somewhat imploding with Intercontinental Champion Wade Barrett defending against Ezekiel Jackson. Yes, the last ECW Heavyweight Champion, and no one mentions it. That shows you how much Stanford cares about that company. Your World Tag Team Champions, Big Show and Kane, will possibly be dropping these? Maybe, maybe not. To CM Punk and Baby Batista himself, Mason Ryan. If you wonder where I got that from, I cue that to the fans of FCW. Catherine Hollister is one of them. She's one of the folks that coined the Baby Batista name. I don't know if she copyrighted it. Maybe she should have for TV t-shirt sake, and we'll mention our t-shirts in a moment or two. In a Kiss My Foot match, damn, I thought that thing died with Bret Hart back in the day. Michael Cole will take on Jerry the King Lawler, and your co-main events at this point are World Heavyweight Champion Randall Orton taking on Christian, and in an I Quit match, John Cena takes on The Miz. Any match on this show, Kevin, that you're sitting there going, that's my favorite, and in any one of them you're going, that's my bathroom break match?
I think the entire event's probably going to be a bathroom break match for me.
As
someone who has been shying away from the product, for both companies, I should say, WWE really hasn't done anything for me since, I guess, the fallout after WrestleMania, where I've watched the shows, I've found myself fast-forwarding a little bit too much, falling asleep on occasion, and then completely forgetting that they were even on Monday nights. I really wish that something would happen, and I'm also at the point where I hope something really good happens and I miss it, so that makes me go, okay, I need to watch a show next week. And so far, it just hasn't happened yet. I mean, really, Lawler and Michael Cole, not making me excited.
I guess the same question is posed to you, Phil. Is there a particular match in the show that you're going, that's a moneymaker? Or are you sitting there going, God, again? I mean, and we talked about it Sunday night, Mace, Omega, and I, and you can find the download on wildtalkradio.com. And we're just going like, this thing actually made it from Mania to Extreme Rules to a third pay-per-view with Cole and Lawler. I mean, is this going to SummerSlam, dude?
I hope not. I mean, I don't really want to watch it after this one. I don't think Cole's going to end up with a Hall of Fame ring, so hopefully this is just the bloody end of it. It kind of seemed like they were going that way last night after the whole ceremony, and they had Cole kind of sort of going back to announcer guy, begging for forgiveness and everything like that. So maybe he got swagger away from him. Lawler's just going to beat him in 5 minutes, and that's going to be the end of the angle, I hope. On this show, I think Orton and Christian, I mean, okay, there's no match on this show that's like you said, a sure money-making match for the pay-per-view, but Orton and Christian was really, really good on SmackDown, and I really liked the way they worked together, and I'm hoping that they, you know, they're going to get probably a good amount of time at Over the Limit. I forgot the name of the pay-per-view there for a second, which is also not a good sign. But I think Truth and Mysterio might not be that bad. I that's an interesting... We haven't really seen Truth work as a heel yet. So, I mean, he really doesn't have that many matches in the gimmick. He's cut a lot of promos, but we haven't seen him work as a heel yet. And seeing his NWA TNA work from many, many years ago, you know, he's capable. And it might be a fun match. They're both good athletes.
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued. And this is the part where we do the little wrap-up thing, and Bugmace not here. So if you're brand new to our show, thanks for coming out. We really appreciate you being here with us. Bugmace and Omega do an amazing product on Wednesday nights that Kevin was a part of recently. You can find the archive of that called Otaku Talk Live.
Otaku.
I'm going to get that damn name. I've been doing this for a year and change, and I still can't get the damn name right.
Otaku Talk Live. And yes. It's all video games, comics, all that fun stuff, movies. Check it out and find out if someone died yet in the Spider-Man musical. I'm Pam Houston tomorrow night.
I think they're talking to the Wonder Woman pilot imploding, too, from what they were talking about Sunday, so definitely check them out. Saturday night, is there a UFC event Saturday, or is it next Saturday?
Next Saturday is the UFC event. But this Saturday, okay, we will be doing CB Radio Midnight Dish. Join me, Rob Park, Subway, and whoever else we can drag on, and talk about the weird and wacky in the world. So CB Radio, check it out.
Yep, and this Sunday, as mentioned, it is the Over the Limit pay-per-view, so if you listen to WrestleTalk Radio, that will be at 11 o'clock Eastern. You will get the remaining four matches in the Great Debate, the greatest managers of all time. Damn you for making some of these matchups so rockin'. You're going to have Jim Cornette against Ted DiBiase, Classy Freddie Blassie against Bill Alfonso, recent OWW Radio guest J.J. Dillon taking on the Grand Wizard, and Bobby the Brain Heenan taking on Paul Heyman.
Yes.
Captain Lou Albano, Mr. Fuji, Joel Gertner, Not My Vote, and Jimmy Hart have already advanced on in this thing.
Yes, the Great Debate, the greatest manager of all time. Check it out, Muscle Talk Radio.
Alright, I've teased this for 3 hours. We will have two guests on next week's show. One of them is 100% locked, the other is 90. The one that's 100% locked is here. He will be coming on to talk about Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, the great promotion out of California, and their event known as All-Star Weekend 8. Former NWA World Tag Team Champion, former Peterson Cup competitor. He is one of the founding fathers of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. Joey Ryan will be with us. And
the next one is... Should we build up to that one, Alan?
Do you want me to announce it tonight? I mean, there's...
I think we should announce it, but it needs something.
Oh,
This is so big, it needs a little something extra behind it. So let's just hit this.
What's the next big,
And now you announce it.
Yes. Former WWE World Champion, former two-time UFC Heavyweight Champion, and author of Death Clutch, Brock Lesnar, is scheduled to be here next week on Online World of Wrestling Radio. It's a 90% chance, but hey, I have to announce it. The publishers of his book said go ahead and announce it. So mark it, talk to friends, talk to their friends.
Facebook it.
Holy crap. Yes. If it doesn't happen, I'm sorry. If it does happen, don't you wish you were me. Holy crap.
Yes. Facebook it, tweet it, MySpace it, Bebo it, email it, snail mail, smoke signals, tell your friends, wildtalkradio.com, Brock Lesnar, OWW Radio, 9 p.m. Eastern, next Tuesday.
Yeah, Nature wants to know what's my backup. My daughter Abby will be a guest. She's awesome. Thanks to Kevin Scott for being here, Phil Strum for being here, Shima Zion, friend him. Find him on Facebook, friend him. He was awesome. He will be back when we get to the next Evolve event down the road. Thanks to Miriam Fontaine, Samu, Joe Bruin. Don't forget New England Wrestling Hall of Fame. Thanks to Phil for bringing him to us. PoughkeepsieJournal.com is the place to find Phil's wonderful blog known as Under the Ring, which I believe you can find on. They have their own Facebook page now. Kevin has his own Twitter, Kevin K. Scott. Phil, I think you guys have a Twitter?
Yeah, it's very simple. Facebook.com/underthering, Twitter.com/underthering.
Very
simple.
Both to me.
Yeah, I'm Twitter.com. My name is Wojcik. There's some pretty awesome memorabilia you can buy from us, the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Go to cbradio.ewzone.com and buy all of our stuff, including keychains and shirts and all that fun stuff. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wildtalkradio, and facebook.com/wildtalkradionetwork.
Yeah, hopefully Spug will be with us next week, and Mace unfortunately has a prior engagement, and now he's going to be pissed. Thanks to Tim Stein, Sir Rockin, Brad Dykens, Jason Dedrich, the Big Kahunas. Thanks to Guns N' Roses for providing an awesome soundtrack, and what better way to go out than a song that I believe is written about Slash's heroin addiction. We're taking it out with Mr. Brownstone on All Our World of Wrestling Radio. See you next week.